I have a question for you. I'll introduce the show really quick, but then I have to ask you a question. Hi, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Here's a question. The O.J. Simpson show is done. There's no more O.J. Simpson show.
Did you watch it?
I won't tell you how it ended. I will not tell you how it ended. You'll be shocked. For people who did not get to see the last episode of The People versus O.J. Simpson, whoa, what a surprise at the end. What are you going to do now?
I have fallen behind just one. Last night, Michael had a choir concert. Mm-hmm. There was a Hawks game. Mm-hmm. And I have to
tell
you.
And a Cubs and a White Sox game. Last night after 9 o'clock was
busy.
The busiest TV. Really, I was like floating all over the place trying to get everything in at the same time.
I'm still one behind on ABC's The Family, too.
Yeah.
We talked to Zach last week.
Zach Guilford.
So it was cute because after the concert, this one kid, Nick, comes up and says, "Hi, Mrs. McInerney." And I said, "Hi, how are you?"
Mm-hmm.
And first thing out of his mouth is he goes, "Are you taping the Hawks game?" And my husband goes, "Do not say a word."
Right.
I said, "Jim, he just asked if we're taping it."
Yeah.
I said, "Why? Do you know the results?" And he said, "Yes." And I'm trying to make my face not any kind of emotion
right
now.
Oh, that's nice.
So enjoy the game. You're
that's
taping it, right?
Because nice.
I mean, it was very weird.
Yeah.
But so, yes, I did not see the OJ thing. There was too much to watch when we came home.
I'm going to miss it, and I can't figure out why, because it's the strangest combination of good and bad I've ever seen in a television show. Every time I go, this is so ridiculous. Why am I wasting my time on this? I go, oh, this guy, what's that? That keeps happening week after week after week, and now it's over, and they can't really do a sequel. I mean, they could, but...
That would be
his
dumb.
His trial for stealing sports memorabilia is not as exciting
that
as
would
his
just
first
be a two-episoder.
Yeah, it would be a very fast one. But I was pointing out, I was watching it with one of my kids last night, and I was pointing out how in almost every case, because I hope I'm not ruining anything here, but at the very end, they do this epilogue of what has happened to all the major players since the O.J. trial. And what they do is they put up a picture of the actual person.
Like Marcia Clark,
yeah,
and then Paulson.
Yeah. And then the
Paulson.
Actors portraying them in the role. And on every one, you go, wow, that looks like that guy. Oh, that looks just like her, you know, after one. And then the last one is O.J. Simpson. And that's the one where he didn't really sound like him. He didn't really look like him. I know it's star power because Cuba Gooding Jr. has been nominated for an Academy Award. Or he won supporting actor.
Yeah, but
actor.
Not for that. You got Travolta in this to win every award.
Right.
How close in resemblance was John Travolta's Robert Shapiro and Robert Shapiro's Robert Shapiro?
Close.
The eyebrows,
wasn't the
really,
closest.
Only.
Yeah, Johnny Cochran was extremely close.
That guy, Cyrus B. Vance, what's his name?
Courtney B. Vance.
I was close.
Cyrus Vance, I think, invented the Reaper.
Cyrus Vance was the Secretary of State under Jimmy Carter.
That's who it was. Cyrus
Reaper.
McCormick invented the Reaper, and you shouldn't fear it. That's what I hear.
Oh, I know who invented the Reaper. Eli...
Whitney.
Manny.
He invented the cotton gin.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna Google.
Don't Google.
Because I know who did the Reaper. God, it was Jethro Tull.
The song?
No, a guy named Jethro Tull, which they took the band name from. I think I might
I
be right on
no,
that.
No, that's not it. The
I'll
Reaper
find
was,
out.
Okay.
But what were we talking about again?
O.J. Simpson. And the actors and how much they do or do not resemble the actual people. Because on some of them, it really is amazing. Especially Courtney Vance playing Johnny Cochran. They nailed that one. And Dershowitz is really, really close. And Barry Scheck is really, really close.
I was just going to say, Rob Morrow does a pretty good job of Barry Scheck. I forgot all about Barry Scheck.
Well, he, for some reason in this show, in the miniseries, and maybe that was the case during the real trial because you had a lot of star power on the Dream Team, but he wasn't really that prominent, at least not
right.
in the show anyway. Maybe he did some behind-the-scenes stuff that just wasn't interesting, but he's just kind of sitting there. They give him a line or two every episode, or they gave him a line, and that's about it for him. That's the guy from Northern Exposure, for people who don't know.
I loved him.
Yeah.
I loved him in The Moose.
Yeah.
And who's the other guy who's in My Fat Greek Wedding, too? Corbett.
John Corbett.
Love him.
Yeah. He's mysteriously not in this O.J. Simpson movie.
He should have been.
Why he's
he
not.
He could have played
not.
Cato. Was Cato back?
They did not bring Cato back. They show him, the real Cato Kaelin, and then the guy who played Cato Kaelin. And that, I don't know if you remember. Do you remember when you and I interviewed Cato Kaelin a thousand years ago?
We did a bit with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember what the bit was. I just know we did.
And it was just strange because he was famous just because he was the roommate of a guy who either did or did not kill his wife.
So began the Kardashian
I know.
Way.
That was one of the first instances of a guy who just fell into fame.
Right. And then the Kardashians spun off from that same OJ thing. So OJ is the nucleus of
reality TV.
Way too long, 15 minutes of fame.
Right. I think we can blame John and Kate Plus 8 on OJ Simpson. I'm going to. All right, let's do this. A quick break and then a whole lot more on today's show, including killer robots who will come from the future to destroy us.
No.
It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff and my new name, Clarification.
Clarification.
Yes, nice to meet you.
Because why, Clara?
Well, you brought up the Reaper.
Yes.
And I got my inventions confused. Cyrus McCormick was
Cyrus
the guy.
Cyrus McCormick.
Who claimed that his Reaper was invented in 1831.
Yep.
So Cyrus McCormick, didn't he work on this radio station?
I don't think he did
What am I confusing him with?
Well, there was Colonel McCormick.
That must
be. I believe McCormick Place is named for him.
And the Reaper.
And Maureen McCormick, who also has her own convention center.
May I get half points for saying that Jethro Tull was the name of an inventor that the band that Ian Anderson took? Because
what did he invent?
The seed drill.
Oh,
remember we
right.
talked to Ian Anderson?
Right.
And Jethro Tull was an agriculturist, an English agriculturist.
Yeah.
Orion was friends with his grandkids, I think.
Is that true? I didn't know that.
I think so.
Yeah.
He was from Berkshire.
Oh, in England?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he helped bring about the British Agricultural Revolution. He perfected a horse-drawn seed drill in 1701 that economically sowed the seeds in neat rows.
How about that?
Before that, the seeds were all willy-nilly because, you know, when you're driving in the beautiful landscape of Illinois.
Yes.
And you check out the soybeans and the corn, it's all so completely even-steven.
Right. That's the way it should be.
Railroad tracks.
Right. If you saw it any other way, you would think... Those farmers are sloppy.
It would be like a man's beard where hair just shows
right.
up every which way.
Right. And they would have no way to properly cut them because there'd be no paths.
No rows.
Right.
How do you get down to harvest?
We have Cyrus McCormick to thank for all of this.
No, that's Jethro Tull.
Jethro Tull. We have to thank Jethro Tull.
He was sitting on a park bench when he invented it. Snot's running down his nose.
I didn't know that part was true. How about that?
And Cyrus McCormick claimed his Reaper was invented in 1831, giving him the true claim to the general design of the machine. Over the next few decades, the Hussey and McCormick Reapers
I don't want you to get nasty.
Would compete with each other in the marketplace, despite being quite similar. But Cyrus McCormick gave us the Reaper.
Now, didn't a couple kids in your high school refer to you as the Hussey Reaper, and you went to the principal and said, this must stop. We can't have this.
Only when Blue Oyster Cult was playing on the car radio.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea.
Oh, wait.
What?
We have another. Hi, I'm Clarification. How are you, Gail?
Hi, Clara. I'm calling to clarify for you that Franklin McCormick.
That's who I'm thinking of.
That's the GN guy.
Yeah.
Right. Did the midnight show. He would read poetry and play beautiful music, and he had this wonderful voice. He was delightful to hear when I was in college when we were cramming for tests, but then I used to listen to him later on when my babies would get up at like 2 o'clock in the morning,
wow.
midnight. I'd sit and listen to Franklin McCormick, and oh, he had a wonderful voice. It came out later that he did a lot of drinking the beer that was on his commercials, but who cared? The voice was...
Hey, that's a true endorsement, Gail, when
right.
you're actually using the product while on the air.
Right. We use my pillows. We're not embarrassed to admit that.
Yeah, but you sit on yours.
I do sit on mine, right.
Those aren't pillows.
It conforms to the shape of whatever body part it's around. It's fantastic.
Well, Gail, we are going to bring back that show where it's just poetry and
that's
what else?
That's how it should be. Love letters.
Yeah.
Oh, it was magnificent.
Well, thank you for clearing that up.
You're welcome, Clara. I enjoy listening to you two people.
Thank you.
Stay out.
Thank you very
Thanks,
much.
Gail.
So he was like the Delilah of his day.
Yes.
Right?
Pillow talk.
Yeah.
My pillow talk.
Right.
Right. How come Steve Bertrand, who's also on the Walk of Fame, didn't know it was Franklin McCormick?
Steve knew. He was holding back.
I was just holding up. Yeah, I didn't want to
seem showy.
Invoke Clara.
You just said Colonel. Oh, Colonel McCormick?
I said Colonel.
Right.
Yeah.
But he's not on the Walk of Fame.
And that's a misjustice, in my opinion. That's why I refuse to attend any more ceremonies until
he's
brought in.
You guys have a party
in.
Down there. You've got clarification and misjustice.
Right.
Well, Bill needs a name.
It's crowded in here. Oh, I've got names, but they can't be said on the radio.
Pillow sitter.
Right. That's my Hopi Indian name. I am the pillow sitter.
God, I haven't thought of the Hopi Indians because I was going to go on a pun because that's the easy way out.
Yeah.
But wow.
Yeah.
I loved studying Native Americans and going to the Tommy Bartlett Water Show in the Stand Rock. You said Indian ceremony back then, but now it's Native American.
There's a museum in Evanston that I pass by almost every day that is an Indian cultural center, a Native American Indian cultural center. And I've never been in there, and I pass by it nearly every single day. It's the same thing as people who live in Chicago, and they go, yeah, I've passed by the Adler Planetarium or the Field Museum, but I've never actually gone in. I don't know why I haven't been in there. It's minutes away from my house.
You should go.
I would like to go.
Pick up a Loretta sandwich at that Sarkis Grill.
That's right down the street.
All right.
It's ridiculous.
I'll meet you out
I don't
there.
Know why I haven't been there.
It's weird. I grew up in Brookfield and never went to the Brookfield Zoo.
And you worked there.
I know. Figure
that
out.
That doesn't make any kind of sense. All right. All kinds of stuff on today's show. Will there be robots from the future sent here to destroy us?
They're not going to hurt
us.
There
will be. Dr. John Duffy also being sent from the future to destroy us. All of our guests have that one thread in common today. They've all been sent from the future to destroy us. Listen in. I think you'll enjoy it. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. Thrilled that you're here. Thrilled that you're listening. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, that will get you in. George Mason University, which is located in Fairfax, Virginia, meant very, very well. They have a school of law out there, and they decided because of the death of Antonin Scalia that they would rename their law school after Antonin Scalia.
That's great.
Isn't that a nice honor? I think that's a very nice honor. So they did, as of March, they changed the name of their law school to the Antonin Scalia School of Law. That's not bad, right?
Scalia School.
The Scalia School, yes. The problem is they didn't really think this out fully, but the acronym for the Antonin Scalia School of Law is ASSOL. Which
it's missing a letter.
Come on, guys. Missing... To be fair, it's missing two letters, but whenever you see it written anywhere on any abbreviated forms, like their hashtags and stuff, it doesn't look good because you've got your A and your S and your S and then your O and then...
What's the school mascot? Do we know that yet?
That was the best line. You can go home
now. You win.
Now.
Yep, you win.
You can all just right. go home.
I'll see you.
Antonin Scalia School...
Of Law.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. See the problem now? You see the problem now?
Yeah, but that's not. It's all right.
I always thought, and, you know, he was a magnificent actor, was Peter Falk, a fantastic actor.
Loved him. Columbo.
Columbo, Princess Bride, The In-Laws, one of the funniest movies of all time. I always thought that if some school said we should have a university and name it after Peter Falk, I don't think you could have Falk U without anybody complaining. There'd be plenty of people who'd say, I can't send my kids there.
And conversely, you'd have people who would want to send their kids there. I would want my kids to go there.
I would want both of my daughters to attend.
Oh, where do your kids go?
Falk U. Yeah. I'm just asking. I'm just telling you that's where they go to school. What's the name of the man on second base? We're nine. You and I 9 years old.
And I'm cool with that. I am totally cool with
that. Absolutely.
All right. Well, I'm sorry I missed a couple of letters in that. I'm not a good speller.
It doesn't spell it out the entire way, although I'm sure if they were creative, they could find a way to spell out the whole word if they wanted to. But it's just enough. It's the essence of the word that looks a little bit negative. And people were joking around about it, so they decided over at George Mason University, we got to figure out some way around it. But they can't. They've already named it after Antonin Scalia. So it's too late. Sorry.
Well, I guess this is somewhat related. I got my mango splitter.
Did you get your mango splitter?
Who are we talking to? I think we were talking to Frank Fontana, and he didn't know about a mango splitter either.
Yeah.
I asked a guy at the produce department, I'm like, how do you cut a mango?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I love this joke.
Mm-hmm.
I said, it's not a joke. I'm serious. I'm having trouble because it's too ooey and gooey, and the seed is not like an avocado,
right,
where you can just
it cut pops it out like a golf ball.
Exactly.
Right.
This is like
it takes
embedded
some work. Yeah.
So I ordered my mango splitter because you are the one who told me about it, and it looks.
You thought I was kidding because you said, "What do you know about the
I'm
mango
sorry,
splitter?"
I doubted you.
But I do. I do know that you want. Don't skimp when it comes to the mango splitters. Get yourself a nice one. It'll last you for decades.
Kevin, I'm sending you a picture of me with my new mango splitter, and it just resembles something.
It looks obscene.
It totally does.
Right. It looks like some contraption from the 18th century that would be used for nefarious purposes, doesn't it?
Those were all great words.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, I went to Falk U, you know. We learned vocabulary over there. I was a vocab major at FU.
All right, well, I haven't used the mango splitter because can I tell you that I've had tons of mangoes and didn't have the mango splitter at the same time. Now I got the splitter and no mangoes.
Yeah, that's prepare for that because that's your life from here on in.
Have you used it?
No, I don't. We don't have one. Those are for rich people. We dream of one
day.
$13.99. We dream of one day getting one. We don't have one. I'm just aware of their existence.
I am shocked. I know you're a grapefruit freak, only pink ones. The ruby
well,
red?
I prefer the ruby red, but the Florida whites are good. Not as good, but they're all right.
And I knew that there's actually a knife that you can use to, a serrated bent knife that you can dig out the...
It's a miracle. Because without it, your time enjoying a grapefruit quadruples. But if you have one, I can get in and out of a grapefruit in 45 seconds if I want to.
You're like a surgeon.
I'm similar. I'm the Dr. Michael DeBakey of grapefruit.
I don't know who that is.
He's a famous surgeon.
How would I know that?
I think he did the... this whole show is just going to be people we think invented things. The theme of today's show is Wendy and I will tell you people we think invented things and then robots from the future will come and destroy us.
And they'll take over the show, hopefully.
That's how it's going to be. That's about how it's going to be.
Well, you whip out these references like I'm supposed to know, and then I feel stupid when I say, who's that?
I think Dr. Michael DeBakey is responsible for the artificial heart. I believe he is one of the pioneers of the artificial heart. If you gave me $100, I'd bet $100 that Dr. Michael DeBakey had a lot to do with the artificial heart. Not Jarvik. That's a separate guy. That's the Jarvik heart. That's separate. That's totally different.
Michael E. DeBakey.
Yeah, the E stands for excellence.
He was a rebuilder of hearts, so
yep.
He had something to do with the heart.
Yep.
He died at 99.
Too young, too soon. Don't you think? He's so close to 100. Don't give up, Dr. Michael E. DeBakey.
Dr. Michael E. DeBakey, whose innovative heart and blood vessel operations made him one of the most influential doctors in the United States, died at the age of 99. Many consider Michael E. DeBakey, E stands for?
Excellence.
To be the greatest surgeon ever.
I'm one of those people. I'm a huge fan.
You're the only one.
I've got a fan page for him. Wouldn't you think a guy named Dr. DeBakey would have invented the cupcake tin?
I think we should give our money back for today's show.
Right, right. No one's going to be charged.
No.
When you guys get your monthly bill for radio... You will notice that on today's date, it's free. You don't have to pay for today's show.
Let's take a break and regroup, shall we?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. All right. We'll be the first to admit it. Today's show is a little strange. I don't know why. It just is.
It's a rainy day, and we're trying to breathe some life into the day.
That's it. You nailed it.
And into our day.
Yeah, that's it exactly.
You had mentioned Dr. DeBakey,
Dr. Michael E. DeBakey.
The things you pull out of your head are just very bizarre.
I'm not sure why I remember so much about him, but I would say if I was putting together a dream team of the best surgeons of all time, I'd find a place for Dr. Michael E. DeBakey.
I think Paula has a reason why you are aware of Dr. DeBakey. Hi, Paula.
Hi there. You're a comedian. You should know this one.
What is it?
He, He did surgery on Jerry Lewis, and Jerry feels that he saved his life.
That's how you know him.
I don't think I knew that until just now.
Yeah. He's famous for that. And if you've got something about Jerry, we know who to blame now.
Wow.
Yeah. But I'll tell you, he set Jerry up. He's good to go till he's 99, too.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's excellent. Well, thank you, Paula. And you got a nice dig in on Jerry Lewis at the same time. That was great.
Always appreciated.
I love Jerry Lewis.
Oh, good.
I love Jerry. Good. We all love Jerry.
I hope so.
I don't think he's that
great. You don't love Jerry Lewis?
I just want to know if he was ever really funny.
Well, yeah, he was. You never saw any of his work with Dean Martin?
Yeah, but it was just
so... It was the Dean Martin stuff that was the best.
Yeah.
It was, but it was so over the top. You think Travolta pulled Shapiro over the top?
Jerry Lewis played it big. He did play it big.
Go big or go home, I guess.
Yeah.
Thanks, Paula. Thanks for the tidbit.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, Paula. So, now, I didn't know that about him.
I thought that's maybe why you were familiar with him.
Mm-mm.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
We're good.
Mike. What's up?
Well, I was just telling your screener that I was a school administrator many years ago in Northwest Illinois, and kind of a first-year administrator went down to play a school in Fulton, Illinois. And they were the Fulton Unity Christian Knights.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read that out the back of their jerseys vertically, with the acronym similar to the Antonin Scalia situation.
Say it again slowly.
Rather interesting when you read that vertically.
Say the, not the initials, obviously, but say the name of...
Fulton Unity Christian Knights.
Sure.
Awesome.
And do you think, is it possible, Mike, that they did that on purpose? Is it possible?
Well, it was a very religious school.
Yeah,
so
then they didn't.
That they were a bit oblivious to what that might be representing. So, which is kind of interesting. When I heard you say that, it stuck with me for 25 years, so I thought it was worth sharing.
Thank you so much, Mike. That's what kind of day this is today. You want to share useless information with everyone else around you.
Exactly. And I'm very good at that, so I appreciate the time.
We'll call back later because the whole show is going to be like that.
We'll see more of this.
All right.
Thank you, Mike.
Take care. Well, how about that?
And somebody is talking about another doctor that they texted us, and you, why are you and heart surgeons, like if heart surgeons for $40
on Jeopardy
ever comes up, you will sweep.
I would do all right. I know a couple of them, and I'm not sure why.
Paul Winchell, first artificial heart.
Well, Paul Winchell's not a heart surgeon. Paul Winchell was an actor, and he's the voice of Tigger in Winnie the Pooh.
I know who he is.
But he was a ventriloquist for years and years and years, and he figured out that much like a puppet, that there'd be a place in your chest cavity for an artificial heart, and he developed it and has the patent. It's true. I know. It's unlikely because you go, I'm not sure Tigger
it'd
would
make
be
you bones.
Right.
I cannot accept this as fact.
I know it sounds outrageous, but believe me when I tell you it's true. He holds at least one and I think several patents for it. And this would have been, oh boy, probably in the mid to late 60s that he did this.
All right.
I know it's weird because it's Tigger and you go, well, what did Piglet and Eeyore invent? But nothing. I mean,
I don't know. I don't have time.
He'll probably die anyway.
What's the use?
I can't believe this, but you're right.
You are the saddest character in all of Disneydom.
Yes.
The one that should really have been watched 24 hours a day.
I'm not a huge Winnie the Pooh fan, but after seeing Peter Dinklage as Winnie the Pooh on SNL this weekend, I have a new love for Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. There's also the Jarvik heart.
That's the one. That's Robert Jarvik. I told you about him earlier. I know. There's no reason for me to know this, and I don't know why I do, but I do.
Paul Winchell died on June 24th of some year, because I don't know when the date is, and I don't want to lose my place.
That's
at the
fine.
Age of 82. He was more widely known as the voice of Tigger and one of the leading ventriloquists of the 20th century, but the first artificial heart was called the Jarvik 7.
Yeah.
It was transplanted into a patient.
Named for Robert Jarvik, right? Is that the guy?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Winchell is one of those rare people whose diverse talents repeatedly led him to an ad popping up.
Oh.
Led him to crossroads of history and celebrity. His autobiography is full of supporting anecdotes. For instance, His dance moves once beat Ricardo Montalban's at a televised competition.
How about that?
Which led to a dinner party invitation.
It always does.
At that meal, he was introduced to Dr. Henry Heimlich, who would soon be known for his Heimlich maneuver.
His maneuver, sure.
Heimlich invited Winchell into his operating room, and on one visit, Winchell had the brainstorm for the artificial heart.
Isn't that something?
Wow.
Tigger. And I can't remember from Winnie the Pooh, two of the actors who did voices on Winnie the Pooh, I want to say the guy who did Winnie the Pooh and the guy who did Piglet. So that's John Fiedler and Sterling Holloway, I believe. I think they died within 20 or 24 hours of each other.
That is freaky.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. I'm almost positive they died less than a day apart.
Wow. You are a font of information.
I know, but it's all that kind of stuff.
It's a rainy day. This is the kind of stuff we need.
I guess.
Stop talking about Donald Trump, right, and we do
true.
Other fun things in
that's
life.
No, you're right, I guess. You're
I
right.
like today.
Yeah.
I'm going to charge double for today.
No, I don't think. Again, for anyone listening, you will not be charged for today's show. When you get your bill, when you get your statement at the end of the month, for the month of this, you'll notice, yeah, you'll notice that it's a comp day. No one's paying for today's show. I think that's only fair, don't you?
No, I'm enjoying it. Again, it's a rainy day. What else is there to do?
When the robots come later, I will share this knowledge with the robots, and that might either buy us time or get us killed faster. I'm not sure which. Steve?
Can I ask, are the robots in the second half of the show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. I just haven't learned this week then, I guess, right?
Steve is preparing, and it's best that we all prepare for the robots.
Okay.
I love these things.
We had them on last year, too, a different set of robots. And it is, I mean, it really is. It's amazing because you're looking at the future. You're going, wow, and there will be a time where, you know, who would have thought we have all the appliances
today? I'm a robot.
Well, you're a robot. People know that, right?
Take me to your leader.
I think people know that.
Who is your leader?
Haven't you had guests earlier this week that you teased for the second half of the show?
Who... Yeah, they never show up.
Right.
Right.
That's on Bill.
Right.
That's on Bill.
I'm 0 for 2 on telling people that guests will be here and then they don't. Well, they show up eventually. They're always late. All right, we're taking a quick break, and then more shows coming your way. Steve's got the news next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Let's get that number out there right away because we have a guest who everybody seems to want to talk to. His name is Dr. John Duffy. He is a clinical psychologist. He's the author of a book that has really helped me out a lot, The Available Parent. And you can go to his website at drjohnduffy.com. Hi on a rainy Wednesday.
Hi on a rainy Wednesday.
Thanks for not leaving, John. We were both very worried that upon listening to the show, you would decide otherwise. But
so
you're
on
here.
The bubble, but glad to be here.
No blame you.
He gets us. See, we have very few guests that reappear, you know. So he comes back, he knows what he's in
That's
for.
That's so true. That's so true.
All right. So what do we want to talk about today? I had mentioned before that a lot of people want to talk to you because as parents, we do the best we can, but there's always room for improvement, isn't there?
Always, always. Right. I mean, it's tricky being a parent these days, and there's so many little variables that you can attend to, and we can beat them to death. But one that's been jumping out at me lately are the labels that we put on our kids, whether we intend to label them good or bad or indifferent. And what made me think of it, I was talking to this 20-year-old guy the other day, and he has this low self-esteem. And I asked, well, where do you think that came from? And he said, well, back in sixth grade, I was an A student, and I was struggling studying for a math quiz. And my mom said, well, maybe you're just a B student, honey. Hmm. Meaning, really, like, looking to take the pressure off, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, not meaning, right. Like, you know, and to him, he felt like, oh, I didn't know your confidence in me was so easily shaken, and I no longer feel part of the team, like literally part of the family, because everybody else is really smart.
Right.
So, you know, like that, it was just kind of this like glaring example of how like unwittingly we can put labels on our kids that they don't even, we're not even aware we're putting right. on them, that have these legs that last 7-8 years and maybe long into adulthood.
Well, how many times have you heard parents say, well, that one, she's my smart one, that one, he's my athlete.
All the time.
That one. It's just, it's a natural thing.
Absolutely, right. And there's pressures affiliated with some of that. And when you have a smart one, one thing we have to remember is there's one that's not smart then. Right. You know, like there's right. something mutually exclusive about right. that, right?
It is an eye opener, though, when you know you find out that both your kids are smart, but they're not getting straight A's, even though they should. That's when I've just decided, yeah, I have A students, but I'm never going to see A's on report cards, and I'm okay with that now.
I love that. I mean, I think if you let your kids know, hey, I know you've got the goods, right? I know you have what it takes. I know you're competent. And this might not be where it manifests. It might not show up on a transcript or a report card. I can live with that, but I expect it to show up somewhere. Like, you know, for Michael, I expect you to be able to like really kill it on the guitar and really sing really well.
And he does. And we were talking to people from college admission and we flat out asked Bill, do you remember, like, mm-hmm. are grades that important anymore?
Right.
You know, you can't get into the college of your dreams with D's, but with a B average and a lot of special outside interests, there's a good chance.
And the college of your dreams sometimes, and I think a lot of us know this, Bill, you and I both have kids in college, mm-hmm. might not be the college of your dreams when you finally realize what they're looking for.
Sure.
And you might find, oh, there's a better fit for me somewhere else where my grades and my competencies fit way better than, you know, Stanford where I thought I wanted to go.
Right, yeah. Right. So for parents who are hearing this, John, and they realize, oh, I have on occasion dubbed my child the blank one, the smart one.
I've done it.
I think everyone has.
I think
at some
we all
point.
Have.
I don't do it anymore, though.
Well, what do we need to do? Is there a way that we can dance around that a little bit?
Yeah, I think you want to back off the actual label and talk about, you know, where your kids' strengths are, where their difficulties are. Really, frankly, and honestly with them, focusing a lot on the strengths, a lot on what I know you can do, you know, because the labels are kind of non-starters. My least favorite, and you kind of hit on it, Bill, is that idea like, not my math person.
Right.
And I always think like, so the kid that's labeled not a math person is in a math class 5 hours a day for
right.
the foreseeable future, or 5 hours a week. For years, right? So how much anxiety must that drive? So instead of saying you're not a math person, maybe backing up from that a little bit and saying, well, we have some work to do in math. You know what I mean? So let's work together and make this more palatable for you. So that hour isn't awful.
But don't schools to some extent also create, I mean, I know parents are the ones who need to be more mindful of it, but schools kind of create labels for kids too.
With the
they?
Special level math classes too.
Yeah.
There's like three levels of math classes and you know when you're not in the top one or when you are in the top one.
You do. And I think, you know, there are labels sometimes for those lower level classes that I don't love. You
the
know,
dummies?
Yeah, that's
really disrespectful.
Terrible name for a
right. Really, we got to think of something better than
that's
dummies,
not
right?
Good. Our school, our reading groups, I'll never forget this, were the Cardinals. They were the best. The Wrens, they were in the middle. And then the Blue Jays were the kids that didn't read so well. And still to this day, I have friends that were in the Blue Jays, and you can't even bring up Blue Jays because they're still sensitive about it.
Oh, I bet. I bet that certain labels are real tough to shake, right?
Yeah.
You know, so you want to give some legitimacy to all those tiers and, you know, really let your kids know, like, okay, we're going to place you where you're going to thrive.
Yeah.
And if you're a Blue Jay this year, you know what, we're going to work toward being a Wren next year.
Yeah.
And also, I have learned basically through the guidance of Dr. John Duffy and his book, The Available Parent, and you're a great therapist to my kids.
And a great uncle to mine.
You like
little known fact.
Yep.
My younger one, Dylan, is not that great in math, but he loves video games and he wants to get into film, maybe directing or making his own film. So then you try and show how math is important when you're trying to figure out you need to edit and how long would this be. You can turn a mundane math class into something that, wow, I'm going to need to know that.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, right. To make it applicable to something that they can wrap their brains around and get into, man, does that help the learning process along, right? You know, and takes a lot of the labeling away because, you know, then he thinks, okay, I'm a filmmaker and I need this element of math in order to do that effectively.
Yeah. Yeah. This ties in somewhat, but it's something Wendy and I were discussing a few days ago on the show, how back in school, you would have this, you'd be playing a game and you had two team captains and they would pick one kid and then the next kid and then the next kid. And then eventually you're down to three or four kids.
Right.
And they realize I'm not very good at this game. Obviously, no one's picking me.
Right.
There must be some better way for all parties than that. Right.
I'm working with a young guy who's learning to be a PE teacher and they're focusing so much on kind of making that. I hesitate to say politically correct because it's better than that.
Yeah.
It's kind of just deftly shifting who's in charge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And changing the games up often enough where everybody's got some degree of competency. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's tricky to do. I think it takes more work than just kind of coming up with a basic curriculum and saying, okay, I ran this last year, I'm going to run it again this year. You have to give it a little thought.
Right.
But if you're willing to give that little bit of investment, you can enhance the self-esteem of every kid in the class instead of just those top five.
Oh, that's better.
Yeah. I was a bossy little girl. I know you find that shocking.
What? Really?
And in elementary school, when we would pick, I was a team captain a lot in kickball because I could kick ass, basically.
Sure.
And I would always pick the next best person other than me, yeah, to be on my team. And then my third choice would always be the person that was picked last because I wanted to include them. Because it bothered me always, yeah, seeing the same person there.
Absolutely.
Go, oh, pick me. Yeah. So my third choice was, or second choice, excuse
that's
me,
nice,
was always that person.
Oh, that's very nice.
Well, one element of hope here is I think our generation of kids now are better about that. Like they recognize,
yes,
okay, this kid's really struggling. I'm going to draw him onto my team. I don't care if we win today. I'd rather this kid felt better.
That's
there's
so
a lot
nice
of that going on, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the system where you just count off and then all the odd numbers are on one team and
that's
the even numbers
great
on the other. That's
right,
so much better.
So egalitarian.
Yeah.
Yeah. No losers. Right.
Yeah.
Agreed.
That's much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. A quick break and then Dr. John Duffy is
what,
here.
What, are you from Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Stephen Avery. Yeah.
We're going to milk a cow then with Dr. John Duffy when we return. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. How long have you been in the business, John?
I've been doing my job about 20 years.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Thank
well,
you.
We have some interesting questions here.
Yeah.
That are pretty great. 630, I'm sorry to have turned the other way, but this, listen to this. Because of the Trump issue about building a wall and all that,
yeah,
my son is being called racist names. What's the best way to handle this, please?
So I assume the son supports.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
it
yeah
seems like
yeah
the son
yeah
supports the wall. Wow. That's a good question.
It's a great question, you know. And one thing is, you know, there's this kind of teachable moment where it's like no matter what's going on politically, it's not okay to, you know, to attack another kid, especially in that way. And, you know, and it's real presumptuous to, you know, say, you know, like he's racist for supporting Trump and we no matter how you feel about him, right? So
can I tell you though that kids use that term very, very loosely, even before the Donald Trump thing. If you would say anything like, you know, oh, I love that mailman, which one? The one with the hat,
yeah,
or the black guy? And you'd go, the black guy, oh, you're a racist. What, really?
Well, in a generation, I mean, if you think back to when we were kids, you know, it was very different. We were able to use language, I think, real loosely. Now kids are kind of like very, very aware of kind of
totally
taking care of one another, and there's this now I'll use political correctness that I think they favors them. I think it's really neat that they're like really are thoughtful and are not willing to be mean to one another. To this writer's point, you know, like, you know, hey, I feel like people are being not very nice to me from my point of view, you know. So one thing he could do is kind of stand up for himself and clarify his position.
He's being called the names, by the way. The clarification here, our son is Hispanic, so
oh
he's
so
being
it's different than we thought.
It yeah is different. I'm
oh
sorry.
Yeah.
I
yeah
misread that.
Right.
So
right,
and we had someone on from Islamophobia who's of the Islam religion,
right,
and she was saying it's so many people have turned away from her and are treating her poorly, and our hearts were breaking thinking of people in the minorities like that that are just they just want to go to school.
And it's so hard to imagine how difficult it is to be in that position. Imagine just walking through a city like Chicago and you are Islam and you feel like, well, just for my faith, just
right
for what I believe, people are looking at me differently, looking at me sideways, afraid of me, you know,
right,
and I'm just a person trying to live my life. You know, it's pretty terrible.
So how much time should a parent take? And my guess is it depends on your child and how old your child is and how interested he or she is. But this election cycle has been so twisted, and we're adults, and we can't figure it out. So
sure,
what do you do as a parent to explain to your child, I'm going to do my best to make sense of this all of this, but it's hard to.
I think it's the way to look at this election cycle from a psychological point of view
yeah
is one teachable moment after another after another. You know, like, so what do you think of the way these guys are talking to one another right
mm-hmm
now? You know what I mean? Like, what do you think of, you know, that comment that you just heard,
mm-hmm,
you know, and to kind of bring that into the living room. It's, there's a lot of like wretched things. I think we'd all agree about this cycle.
Oh, yeah.
But the good thing is that I think it's got families talking. Kids in my office are far more thoughtful about this election than they ever have been about
beforehand. And kids would understand it more because it's taken on the battle tactics of children.
Absolutely.
Hasn't it?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know? They recognize the playground.
You're fat.
Tactics
you're stupid.
Of
you're ugly. You're
right,
dumb.
Right.
That's what little kids would say.
Yeah.
But a lot of times when somebody does make racist remarks at school to some young child who is just really there like you are to learn something,
right.
They shouldn't have to deal with that. A lot of people blame the parents because that's probably what's discussed in their home, but that's not always the case.
No, sometimes it's kind of this peer supportive thing. You know,
yeah.
There's kind of like this bullying element to that where, you know, if one guy gets a couple other guys who think the same way, they kind of will piggyback on one another and attack, you know, what they see as the weakest link in the class, you know, or the person who is racially different or different in some other way, you know. And so there's, again, really teachable moments there for parents, right? Especially parents of the minority kid or the gay kid or the kid who's just different in some other way, you know, to sit down and talk about like, well, how do you want to handle these things when they come up? Because you can ignore them. You could turn around and face them head on. You know, you have options, but you are allowed to kind of stand your ground and, you know, and feel the way you do.
Right.
You don't have to be ashamed of who you are, you know, and that those are important messages, I think, for parents to get across. But you're right, Wendy. It's not always coming from parents. Oftentimes it's just kind of the dynamic in a class.
Yeah, it's like people pile on to get popular,
yeah.
In a sense, to gain acceptance, I guess, is what it is.
Right, right.
And I hate to blame Donald Trump for a lot of things. Actually, I don't really hate doing it. But mm-hmm. I really feel like the kids of today were more accepting of different races and religions and whether they were gay or transgender. It seems kids had an easier time just going, oh, yeah, that's just how it is these days. But I feel that now with this... Trump clown car of debates and everything, it's exactly what you said. She's stupid. She's fat.
That's
you
what
know?
It's become.
I mean,
it has, right,
it's
right.
So we're taking a step
things.
Backwards somehow.
Yeah, we're regressing, right?
Yeah.
So it's almost like now we parents can probably take a page from our kids' books, you know, because they have... There's a lot of, they don't tolerate intolerance very
right.
well, you know? So,
yeah.
And that's not really budging. Even the kids I work with who are Trump supporters or Cruz supporters or Bernie Sanders supporters, you know, I think some people would argue, well, he gets, you know, kind of up in Hillary's face sometimes. And, you know, those kids still have this kind of point of view of kindness underneath it all. You know, they think more policy than I think a lot of adults do, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what changed, John? I know we don't have a lot of time, but
yeah.
Why are kids so much more sensitive to all this than we were a generation or two ago? What? It's just the awareness of what's right and what's wrong? Is that what it is?
Yeah, you know, I like to think that we are kind of maturing as we go, and, you know, and maybe we've taught our kids some really good values that stick, you
yeah.
know? Because, yeah, that's the closest I can come to a really solid answer. Even in my business, you know, 20 years ago, coming in to see me was really taboo for kids. Nobody wanted to come in. Now, kids are way more open to the idea of, you know, yeah, I kind of want to understand my mind a little bit better and how I function the way I do. Even boys, where, you know, it was really, there was a lot of resistance coming from, you know, 16-year-old boys, whereas now...
Just man up. You
yeah.
don't need to reveal your feelings.
Exactly. And now there's this kind of openness to, yeah, I kind of want to check out, you know, I want to look under the hood and see how I function.
Yeah.
And so I think part of it's that. It's just this openness that's kind of developed over time.
It's really intriguing. And it used to be taboo to have a therapist. And now I think it's really hip to just go, oh, yeah, I got my therapist appointment on Thursday nights. And you see people, especially in our neighborhood, you'd see people in the waiting room that you know, and you don't want to look at them because you don't want to say, oh, I know you're coming here. But nobody has that. It's just like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
kids
really...
are very casual about it. Yeah.
And it should be. I'm
yeah.
glad that it's becoming that way.
Oh, so am I.
Because,
so
you know, everybody needs, you know, a little checkup under the hood every once
right,
in a while.
Right, right.
All right, where can we find your book?
You can find my book on my website, www.drjohnduffy.com, or on Amazon.
The Available Parent. It's awesome. Really, try as we may, we're not the best parent in the world, and we all can use some improvement.
Mm-hmm. John, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having
it.
Me.
We'll take a quick break. Kim Gordon has the news next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Yeah. You working on the Chain Gang? Is that your side project?
I was back on the Chain Gang for a little while. I missed the Chain Gang. Are you in the mood for a heartwarming love story? I have a heartwarming love story. If you're in the mood for one, do you like your love stories heartwarming?
Yes.
Listen to this story.
Wow, am I listening to your thought bubble?
Yes.
There's music.
This song, by the way, is in my head 24 hours a day.
The theme to Love Story.
Michelle Legrand's Love Story theme, assisted by Dr. Michael DeBakey. Listen to this story, Wendy, and try not to tear up. Can I throw a challenge at you?
Yeah, I am.
Try not to tear up when I tell you this heartwarming love story. Try.
I do have a marshmallow center despite this hardened exterior.
Right.
And tough girl image.
There's a marshmallow center in there.
I know
somewhere
I need to
in
go
the
on
middle.
A diet, but whatever.
A World War II. This is about as heartwarming as they come. A World War II hero who split up from his fiancée after suffering shell shock is about to have the wedding he missed out on more than 70 years later.
This is sweet.
D-Day veteran Rocky Veckerman broke up with Nora Jackson in 1946, when the world was in black and white. After
you're going to ruin this.
After he struggled to adjust to civilian life, after being wounded by a Nazi sniper for 7 decades. Now, I did the math on that. That's 70 years. Don't ask me to show my work, because I cannot.
This is supposed to be a touching moment. You're cheapening it
with
your jokes.
The rest of this will be heartwarming, as it should be. For 7 decades, Roy Veckerman, bitterly regretted losing his wartime sweetheart. So he set about trying to track her down so that he could apologize.
Apologize?
Yeah, because, you know, in 1946, they were going to be married, and they weren't, and he felt bad for 70 years.
Why didn't he marry her?
Nazis were shooting at him. He didn't
have
time.
After that?
I think the whole time. There wasn't much going on in 1946, Wendy. Incredibly, after enlisting the help of a local radio station, say this. This is what radio stations
Wiener
do.
Wiener and Wabbit?
Yeah, the morning team of Wiener and Wabbit helped Roy Veckerman find his love, Nora Jackson, 70 years later. He enlisted the help of a local radio station. I think Les Grobstein helped him. He was reunited with her after discovering that she lived just 2 miles away from him.
How about that? It was meant to be.
2 miles away after 70 years. They discovered that their partners had since died and they were both now single, and so they picked up where they left off in 1946. On March 26th of this year, Roy proposed to Nora on her 90th birthday.
And do you know what she said? What?
That's not in the story. You're
What did you say?
You're embellishing this love story.
Sure, I guess.
He used this on a scale of 1 to 10, tell me how beautiful this is. He used the same exact engagement ring that he had given her 72 years earlier.
Well, sure.
72 years.
Cuz he had it.
He did.
His wife passed away.
Yes.
He took it off her finger.
We don't, I would imagine, we don't know for sure, but probably when no one was looking. Is anyone looking?
Oops, got the finger too.
don't. The rain you see outside are my tears. They are. Don't make fun. This is heartwarming. Describing their emotional reunion, the dad of two, Roy Veckerman, yes, said, "I thought I wouldn't go around again because of her husband." Well, that's good.
So
that's,
I killed
that's
him.
A smart. No, he didn't. Maybe. No, he did not. I'm reading the rest of the story to see if that was the case, but there's nothing that says that. "I didn't know if she was still married, and I didn't want to get upset about anything. I thought about this for a week. I got into a taxi with a bunch of flowers, and I told the driver to wait for me. I said I would only be a couple of minutes." But this guy has a history of waiting things out. I mean, the last time that happened, it was 72 years ago. You know what his cab bill would be? That's why I always consider Uber as an option, Wendy. "She had no idea that I was coming around, and when I rang the doorbell, I saw Nora through the curtains." That's called peeping town where I live. Where I live, Wendy, that sort of thing is frowned upon, but apparently Roy Veckerman. "She came to the door and said, 'Oh, Roy.' She put her arms around me and gave me a kiss and said, and said,
"This is like the old time radio shows. I like this."
Right.
Look out, Carl Amari.
A rebroadcast of this segment will be on with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf this weekend. She gave me a kiss and said, "Hold me."
Hold me.
They used to do that in the 40s. Now there's apps.
Hold me like you mean it.
Hold me like you mean it.
And where's the ring?
Right. The moment was fantastic, says Roy. 4 hours later, I had to tell the taxi driver that I was staying. I'm not making that
Does
up.
I actually say that?
I'm not making that up. 4 hours later, I had to tell the taxi driver I was staying.
Okay, first of all, why would the cabbie stay there for 4 hours? Well, I know the meter was on.
He just lets off this guy who's 90-something years old, and he's like, I can't just drive away.
Well, after 1 hour, don't you think, I guess he's getting some?
I would have checked up on him. I would have said,
knocked on the door. Excuse me, will you be needing my services?
Right.
Wow.
Right.
That's what you'd say as the cab driver.
Right.
I guess you don't need my services.
I would have looked through the drapes of Nora's house, which obviously are left open at all times of day or night. She needs to close her drapes.
What does she care now? How old is she?
She's nine. She just turned 90.
God bless her. At that point, let it all hang out.
She does. I've lived in the same house for 40 years, and Nora has been in her home for 40 years, 2 miles away.
How about that?
2 miles away. We frequent the same shops. We even go to the same chiropodist.
What?
A chiropodist.
Chiropodist?
They go to the same chiropodist.
That
Wendy.
Can't be a word.
C-H-I-R-O-P-O-D.
Chiro. Chiropodiatrist?
Doesn't say that.
Chiropractor.
It's chiropodist, Wendy.
No, it is not. God, but that's the funniest part of the story.
They attend the same chiropodist, and it says here, neither of them know what a chiropodist does.
It's a dinosaur.
They both attend the same dinosaur. It says they used to attend the same velociraptor, but it tried to kill Nora in 1983. I see her every day now, says Roy. Roy, who has 2 grandchildren, tracked Nora down after calling a radio DJ named Graham Torrington. He plays a show where they feature love music like you're hearing now. After hearing his story, the show's producers used the electoral register to find an address for Nora, and then they passed it on to Roy. After an emotional reunion, the couple is now planning a summer wedding. I wonder if they have to get married. Do you think they have to?
No.
I bet they do. This restores my faith in manhood.
It's pretty sweet.
They lived 2 miles away from each other all these years. They had no idea, and now they're getting together over the summer.
Chiropodist, I don't know if that's how you say it. Chiropodist?
It's not a chiropodist.
Well, it's a chiropractor and a podiatrist together.
Okay. And they have a podcast? Is that why it's called that? I don't know why it got that name, but they attend the same one for many years.
If your
How
heel
did they
hurts,
not see each other in the waiting room?
That's what they probably didn't recognize
oh,
each
maybe.
Other.
That could be it too.
Here, yeah. You want to know how to say it?
Yeah.
Because it can't be chiropodist if it is.
I think it is I'm going with chiropodist. All my money's down on chiropodist.
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 All right, you were close.
Chiropodist.
One more time.
Chiropodist.
And what do they do?
They specialize in feet.
Oh.
A chiropodist was
a podiatrist. I think they're both getting taken.
It has been nearly eclipsed by its synonym podiatrist.
Yeah.
The two words share the Greek root pod, which means foot.
Right. So podcast means footcast. Did you know that?
I do now.
And pea pods are pea feet. It's true.
Pea feet? Is that like I-88 or something? Has a pea foot, like round?
Once again, for people who are listening, you will not be charged for today's show. We very much apologize for today's program.
Even if you're a
chiropodist.
Chiropodist, yeah. No one has to pay.
I can't continue.
Need me to help out?
Yes.
You guys have the giggles.
I know. It's a chiropodist was originally a hand and foot doctor, but in many parts of the world today, chiropodist is used instead of podiatrist.
Oh, all right. Now it makes
oh,
sense.
Oh, my God.
Chiropodist.
Kim, it's love stories. They bring tears to our eyes.
I'm telling you.
You hear a love story.
That's not
beautiful.
What's bringing tears to my eyes.
All right. A quick break. Probably
Pete
more show.
Foot.
Yeah. It's WGN.
A lot of texts on the love story that
sure.
you just read.
It's a heartwarming tale of love. I love a good love story. Don't you? I think everybody does.
I don't know. Actually, no one's commenting on the love story. They're just commenting on everybody's laughing so
yeah.
hard.
Well, there's an ether leak in the studio. There's nothing we can do about it.
Somebody wanted to know if there was a carbon monoxide
is.
Leak.
There is. There's an alarm that keeps going off.
815 says, all caps, I insist on paying for today's show.
No. We will not take your money. It's blood money. We won't take it.
P-foot is a condition that occurs while in the shower. Somebody thinks they should move up the wedding because, you know, on borrowed time.
This summer, they're scheduled to get married, Roy Veckerman and Nora Jackson, who were supposed to be married over 70 years ago, are scheduled to be married this summer. And I like a summer wedding. I think they'll be fine.
I don't think you're going to be invited, especially after this
I don't know.
Account.
I don't know. If Grant Mulvey's invited and he gets a plus one, I'll probably go with him. So.
My new favorite word is chiropodist. That's what I took from that
chiropodist.
Story. Oh, it's chiropodist?
It's chiropodist.
Yeah, listen carefully.
Chiropodist.
Which somebody said George Costanza took his mom to the chiropodist, and that is why he missed his doctor's appointment.
Oh, all right.
Chiropodist.
Never heard of it.
She's got a beautiful voice.
You know, she does. She does.
Chiropodist.
I wish I could... Oh, wait. Okay.
To me, every part of this story is great. This is a great love story, Roy Veckerman and Nora Jackson, who were supposed to be married over 70 years ago. They each married somebody else. You know, there was a war. He went
Thank
off to
you.
War. You're welcome.
So, sorry, I thought it would be the woman again.
So the part that I find most fascinating is that they lived so close, 2 miles away, for all these years and just never ran into each other. I bet that happens all the time. I bet you live by people who have meant something. I'll tell you one in my own life. The woman that was my mom's maid of honor at her wedding lives about a mile away from me. And she sent me a note a couple years ago saying she listened to the show. She and her husband listened to the show. She sent me a really nice note. And then I could tell by the address. I'm looking at the address. I'm like, boy, that's really close by. It's a mile away from me. When I was a kid, I used to see them all the time, her and her husband, and they lived just down the block from me.
That
so
is
I bet
weird.
That happens to people all the time. You don't even realize
Love.
It.
Love.
Love is important.
Love.
She doesn't sound so nice there.
That lady? Oh, the pronunciation
the
lady?
The chiropodist lady? Yeah.
Yeah. Don't you imagine that somewhere in your neighborhood is somebody from your
Keanu
past?
Keanu Reeves is probably living
I don't
living
think
there.
He lives near you. Keanu Reeves probably did not live by you, I don't think. I don't think.
There was a rumor that was it Matt Damon who was going to, Matt Damon or Leonardo DiCaprio was going to, they were sick of the jet setting life of LA and they were going to move. I saw two suburbs, both W related. One was Woodstock, which I think was accurate. And then somebody else said Winnetka and it turned out to just be a lie. He never even really said that. Did you see that making the round in the
yeah,
news?
Yeah, that's been going on. I think the first case of that was years ago. There was a lot of speculation that Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston, because they dated for a short amount of time.
I liked them together. They were adorable.
They made a movie together that wasn't good.
I didn't see it.
And then they were in a relationship for a short time after the movie. And there was so much speculation. There were real estate agents talking about, I'm the one that is helping them and we're trying to find them a place somewhere in the city and stuff. But I don't think so.
No, just we got Jenny McCarthy.
Yeah.
St. Charles.
So that's fine.
With the Wahlberg that I can never remember his name.
Does
Donnie.
He live here? Does
they
he
live
in
St.
Charles?
Charles?
I didn't know that.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, without a doubt, one of your guys is the best shows ever.
Are you sure?
I am concerned. that you're worried about a pea foot. I'm really concerned about these brand new chairs that you got and that you're making them wet.
Too late. Already did, Dave.
I figured as much.
We'll just shout it out.
Thank you, Dave. But you will not be charged. Believe me, we feel guilty for today's show. No one's going to be charged for today. It's free.
He wants to pay for it.
Right. I think we can't take his money.
All right. Well, the fun continues with the Wintrust Business Lunch, which is coming up on the other side of these with Steve Bertrand, 720 WGN.
Kim, thank you so much. Welcome to part two of our show. Again, an apology for part one.
No.
No? You sure?
I think that was the best part of the day.
All right.
I would apologize for this part.
This part, we will at some point, we'll have to apologize for the second part as well. But I just for anyone who missed the first part,
check out the PCast.
Yeah, it'll be posted online, unless the internet
or
comes
footcast.
To its sense. I don't know. All right, a
Can
couple
we
of
thank
things.
Somebody?
Yeah, we need to thank somebody.
A little lunch break today provided by Portillo's. Why all the excitement? First of all, because it's the best hot dog known to man or woman. Well, it's their 53rd birthday. Oh my God, Portillo's and I are the same age.
They look great. You also look great.
You look better than Portillo's.
You look.
Thank you, Kim.
You look better than Portillo's. They look great.
They're opening a new Portillo's in Brandon, Florida. It's the Tampa area.
Yeah.
South Loop opening late next month. Deerfield opening at the end of the year.
I'm excited about that one.
That's close
That's
by, right?
Yeah.
And if you register, I believe, at portillos.com, you can get free chocolate cake on your birthday, which is amazeballs.
How nice of them to do that.
The reason we bring this up is because if we partake in some complimentary food, courtesy of Portillo's today.
Oh, a quick timeout. I saved you, by the way, Kim. I saved you a piece of chocolate cake.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. It's down here for the anytime you want it.
I think Bertrand took it.
Oh, I had saved you a piece of chocolate
That's
cake.
That's all right.
It's been stolen.
I had cake last night. I don't need cake again.
Oh. I think we do have a piece. But anyway, in order for us to partake in some complimentary lunches, we thought, you know, that's not exciting for a listener. How can the listener win on this?
Mm-hmm.
So right now, I want you to pick a particular caller number.
Mm-hmm.
At 312-981-7200.
Can I divulge it?
Yeah, that'd be helpful.
It is caller number 12.
Caller number 12, if you are that particular caller, 312-981-7200, how about a $50 gift card to Portillo's so you can get, I love their new billboard, by the way, because it says beef cake, and there's a picture of their beef and a piece of their fabulous chocolate cake.
Mm-hmm.
And they have another one, but I forgot it.
Oh. So not as effective as beefcake, but still.
Beefcake is just fun to say because I call you that off the air.
Right. A lot of people.
But a $50 gift card can feed the whole family, or you can just eat it amongst yourself.
Yeah. But you have to be caller 12. So dial it up now, 312-981-7200. If you are caller 12, the $50 gift card to Portillo's coming your way.
And thanks for being there, Portillo's, and opening more.
Oh, they're so good. They're so good. All right. A couple of quick things. Thing number one, as Kim mentioned in the news, Brian Bickle is returning to the Blackhawks, and I was you already know this, but I went to the game on Sunday, and I don't know what made me think of this, but I was just thinking how much I miss Brian Bickle. He was a big, big part of the Blackhawks for several years. He's been playing in Rockford,
Ice
and
Hawks.
Now he got called up to the big team again, and welcome back, Brian.
29?
Could be. His age or his number?
His number.
Could be.
Bob from Highwood is going to Portillo's.
Congratulations, Bob from Highwood. We'll send your card out. But he was an integral part of the Blackhawks for quite a while and really stepped up his game, not last year in the playoffs, but the year before. He was always in the right place at the right time and always converted and scored some great goals and made some big hits on whoever the Hawks were playing. And I've missed him. So I'm glad he's back with the team. I hope it's for a while.
He's a nice guy, and I love his calendar where he put together the Pit Bull calendar.
Yeah.
It's hanging up in my kitchen
right
now.
Yeah. So welcome back, Brian Bickle. The other thing is also reported in Kim's news, we lost another show business icon and another... For some reason, the world of music has taken a bigger hit in the last several months than ever before. It seems like nearly every day somebody important from the world of music has died this year. This time around, it's Merle Haggard.
Paved the way for some good twanging.
I don't know. I have to be honest. My knowledge of him is limited. I'm not the biggest country music fan in the world.
You know, I wasn't, but it's like, what is country music anymore?
Well, it's changed a lot.
Taylor Swift is country.
It has morphed much more into pop music than ever before. But there still is like the old country music, the kind that you heard for years and years. That still does exist. And I would say Merle Haggard is probably one of the best representatives of that form of music, wouldn't you?
Yes.
The song that always comes to mind is that song Okie from Funoki.
That's his?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just looking through his bio. He had an upbringing.
Okie from Muskogee, by the way, not Funoki. Okie from Muskogee.
The Okie Funoki Swamp is what you're thinking about.
I was thinking of that song, too.
He was only... Okie from Muskogee.
Not Skokie. No. That would be a fun song, but I don't know that that song existed.
In 1970, Merle Haggard was voted Country Music Association Entertainer of the Year. Muskogee wins Single Album of the Year honors, 1970.
Oh.
77, inducted into the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame. Can I tell you how much fun I had at the Country Museum in Nashville?
Did you? Even though you're not the biggest of fans of that, I mean...
I wasn't, but I have changed.
What changed you? Why?
Well, because you think, you hear songs like Linda Ronstadt started to do some country music
right.
when she began her career. All the people who played as session musicians, Dolly Parton's Jolene is probably one of the best songs ever recorded.
Judy Pilek just got back from the Grand Ole Opry, I think, last weekend.
Where she was performing.
She was great. The boots went right up to there.
She does The Goodbye Girl, the musical out there, and people love it.
My best friend went down to Nashville a couple years ago to see the Grand Ole Opry and loves now outlaw country. I just texted him that
really?
Merle Haggard died. And then not country people, but...
How about that? Maybe just being there maybe just turns you.
It does, but I mean, I've always been like a Southern rock girl. Like, I love the Allman Brothers, Marshall Tucker Band, the Outlaws, ZZ Top, first couple of albums. And that's all Southern rock.
Mm-hmm.
Molly Hatchet, yeah, I'm a little half-white trash. But it all got its sound from these people. And we didn't go to the Grand Ole Opry when we were there because Michael was at blues camp, and we had our days broken up a little bit.
Yeah.
But the Country Music Hall of Fame was amazing. And I mentioned they put on this free concert, which they could never do here. I mean, people were just coming up in the courtyard of the Country Music Hall of Fame. And Al Cooper from Blood, Sweat, and Tears did a bunch of session work on keyboards on some of these old country tunes.
Yeah.
You know what it is, Wendy? It's the most American music, really.
It probably is.
So like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's coming up, doesn't tell a story about the U.S. the way
right.
country music does in a lot of ways.
That's true, I guess.
It was pretty cool. I want to move to Nashville. I'm not going to be Spike's neighbor.
It's going to be a long drive for you every day.
I know.
Think about it.
But I fell in love with it there.
Yeah?
It's really cool. That's when Mike Nesmith came up on stage because he had some early days. He had done some session work. This was the Bob Dylan, Johnny Cash exhibit. So then you learn to appreciate that. Johnny Cash was fantastic.
So the criticism that a lot of country music sounds the same, would you call that inaccurate?
Well, it's a genre of music. A lot of blues sounds the same, but with different messages.
Yeah.
A lot of rock and roll sounds the same.
Yeah. I imagine.
Yeah, sure
grunge
does.
All sounded the same.
I guess so.
Come on, the classical music, it's all the same.
Classical music all does sound the same.
Smavelis, Smishwin.
I don't know what it is, but like a lot of times with country music, I'll go, I've heard that song 1,000 times, and then somebody will go, no, that just came out on Wednesday, and I'll go, oh, because it sounds like something I've heard before. But I guess you could say that about almost any kind of music. But for some reason, for me, it doesn't cut through for me. And Steve, what you said is true. It's uniquely American, and I appreciate that. But I don't know what I don't know. I've tried.
Go to Nashville; it'll change
your
mind.
Will that do it? Yeah.
Seriously,
I've not taken tours like you did, but I've been to Nashville a couple of times, and I don't know. It's fine. I guess you...
Now, we're talking about Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh,
what, did
no,
you go to the one in Tennessee?
No.
No, what else?
Well, did you go there when you were traveling to do stand-up?
Nearby when I did stand-up. I passed through it when I didn't
work
there.
Oh, that's not going there.
But when I was a kid once or twice... And,
that's your kid. Who
cares?
Yeah,
I guess. All right.
That's not going to make
it... So go back and it'll change me?
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
The Nashville Predators play right across the street, so I walked by and flipped off the...
Oh, that was nice.
The stadium.
That was nice.
I don't like them.
Was that before you beat up the ice cream girl?
No, I was going to bring that up, too, but I didn't beat her up. She just said that she is no fun, and honey, I am more fun than you'll ever be.
Oh.
And I kind of swore at her.
But you don't still hold a grudge.
No, I'm feeling guilty. It's still bothering me. And you know, when I go back this summer, I'm going again in July, I'm going to look for that girl in the ice cream truck.
Oh.
And punch her.
Right. Pop her right in the forehead.
I'm gonna remember me? You said I was no fun?
Take a scoop of this.
I got your scoops right here.
Say that. Do that. Take care of it.
God, if she's still working in that ice cream truck, I'm going to feel really sorry for it. I'll give her $100.
Now, you just said it on air.
It's a year later. If she's still doing it, being miserable, making fun of people with their kids.
Maybe that's her dream. You can't
I
take her dream
it.
Away from her.
At least be the driver of the drinking tandem or whatever that thing is. Have you seen pictures of
what
this?
What is that?
All the bachelor parties I noticed. We went to, there's a B.B. King's place there in downtown Nashville. A ton of bachelorette parties are going on there.
Oh, it's like that little shuttle bus that goes from place to the next.
Yeah, there's it's a bar on wheels, basically, and you rent it out, and I think you have to put in reservations like a year in advance.
Yeah, it's very popular.
It's almost harder than getting bozo tickets.
Right.
I can't wait till they call me to go to the bozo show.
You're going
to
get your tickets. You'll believe me. They will not forget about you. All right, a break, and then a lot more show. There will be robots here at some point today, I promise. And then Kristen McQuarrie, who we've just found out is not a robot. She will be with us later on. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. We just found out in the news not long ago that Merle Haggard has passed away, 79 years old. Really, if you're building yourself a Country Music Hall of Fame, Merle Haggard would certainly have a place in it. And Wendy, you're telling me all kinds of facts about him that my knowledge of him was extremely limited, but you've told me some interesting things.
Yeah, I didn't know much about him. He appeared once in a while on Hee Haw.
Yeah.
And he did some work with a bunch of people, Buck Owens.
Waylon and Willie.
Yeah, and he was like on tour. He was supposed to perform
tomorrow night. In Cape Girardeau, Missouri.
Really?
Yeah.
Because in March, he had a couple of nights scheduled in Nashville at the Ryman Auditorium in downtown Nashville.
That's big.
And he had to cancel those because he was in failing health for quite some time.
His schedule's in front of me. I always kept, this is just something I did, I kept Merle Haggard's schedule in front of me. Tomorrow, Cape Girardeau, Missouri. The next night, Friday night, Springfield, Missouri. Then in St. Louis at the Peabody Opera House.
Could you call him and tell him that he won't be showing up?
Somebody better call them. Because it's going to get crazy if they're not aware.
His dad died when he was really young, and he was 10 years old. He hopped on his first freight train with a friend, and then...
When did you hop on your first freight train? Do you remember your first freight train ride as a girl? You and Boxcar Willie?
I would have done it, but I can barely step off an escalator when it's moving, and I certainly can't get off the sidewalks at Disney.
Right.
So there's no way I could time it.
Freight
I tried so many times.
Is dangerous.
Couldn't jump on.
Nope. Too bad.
Merle Haggard was 21 years old. He was sent to San Quentin prison following a burglary attempt. Now, check this out. He's in prison, and that's when Johnny Cash does his live San Quentin gig. And so... A young Merle Haggard was 21 years old, and he goes, oh, my God, I love this. I want to become a musician. So he played in the prison band.
How did they do?
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not familiar
with
their
work. They
didn't
have many gigs.
No.
Just one place.
Over and over and over.
He worked in the San Quentin textile mill, and when he got out in 1960, he was married to his first wife, Leona Hobbs. He had four kids, and he was determined to turn his life around.
Good for him.
So during the day, he dug ditches and did electrical work, but at night, the nights belonged to music.
Yeah.
And he got hooked up with Buck Owens, the Bakersfield country music scene in California. 1962, he releases his debut single, Skid Row. I forgot to tell you that his family lived in a converted railroad car.
Did they really?
Yeah. They were from Bakersfield, California, and they didn't have a lot of money, but they weren't destitute. And then he turned his life around, and he hit the top of the charts in the country music scene for quite some time, and... In 2010, he got the Kennedy Center Honors Award.
Oh, that's big.
And in 2015, two more albums with Willie Nelson and Django and Jimmy.
Django and Jimmy?
Yeah.
I don't know Django and Jimmy.
Yeah, I don't either. And
Steve,
then,
Django and Jimmy.
Yeah, that one slips by me, too.
All right.
Tango and Cash, I know.
I know Tango and Cash, and I've seen Django Unchained 3 times, but I don't know of Django and Jimmy. Country Stars, I'm guessing.
Yes.
It's just, you've heard that joke, right, about what do you get, what happens when you play a country and western song backwards? You get your car back, you get your girlfriend back, and you get your dog back. That's
non-musicians
like
are so funny.
Every time I hear a country song, that's the joke that's in my head.
I heard it with blues.
Did you really?
Yeah,
I guess so.
I mean, again,
it's interchangeable.
Non-musicians, they have to make fun of musicians.
I know. I didn't write that joke. It's just I've heard it 1,000 times.
What jokes do they write about stand-up comics?
I can't say them on the air. I can't. But for some reason, every time there's a country song on, I go, okay, that guy, like in the joke, he just lost his job, and like in the joke, his dog ran away, and girlfriend split up with him. So,
but that's blues, too.
I know,
it's just
I know.
A different sound.
You need conflict, I guess, to tell your story.
Seriously, right? Not to compare this to stand-up comedy, but that has something to do with it, too.
Yeah.
If everything's going great in your life and you're never teased, you're not going to be funny.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. All right.
I do want to say that a lot of people, he really was a great songwriter, evidently, and he had a bunch of classics that have been recorded by Dolly Parton, Emmylou Harris, The Byrds, Vince Gill, Grateful Dead,
oh, wow.
And a million other people. So.
Wow.
All right, we're going to find out about Django and Jimmy. Hey, Dave.
Django and Jimmy was Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson. They just released that album about a year ago.
So that's their pseudonym?
Pardon?
Who's
Do they
Django
go by those
names
Jimmy? At times, or is that a song they sing? Why? What is
that's
Django?
A song they sing. It's oh. like their old song, Poncho and Lefty. That was Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson also.
So Poncho and Lefty are now Django and Jimmy. For people keeping score, change your scorecards. Poncho and Lefty, now Django and Jimmy.
You need a poncho today. It's raining. See, that could be a country song.
That could be a country song. Well, thank you for knowing that, Dave. We appreciate that.
All right.
Only 79. You too. Only 79 years old.
Yeah.
Put your Django on. It's raining.
That's solid advice.
Django's Poncho?
Poncho and Lefty.
And Django and Jimmy.
I didn't know Poncho and Lefty existed, and now I have to update my date book.
You're cheating hard.
I guess. All right. We'll take a quick break. Steve with the news, and then a lot more show. There will be robots. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
To all beef, patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, on a sesame seed bun.
Say that again.
To all beef, patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, on a sesame seed bun.
To all beef, patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, onions, pickles, onions, on a
McDonald's Big Mac. The big sandwich with the great big taste that everybody's talking about.
Sesame seed bun, and we forgot the onions.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did say onions.
Are you sure?
It said onions.
All right.
To all beef, patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, on a sesame seed bun.
McDonald's Big Mac. The great big sandwich with a great big taste.
Lettuce. Pickles. Cheese.
Hey, that's a
Big Mac.
You deserve a break today at McDonald's.
Where your dollar gets a break every day.
Far out.
Yep.
Far out.
Far out is right.
Thank you, John Denver.
Do you remember for a while McDonald's had a thing, their ad campaign was you could go into a McDonald's and get a hamburger,
Let me finish this.
Go on.
A drink and change for your dollar.
That's it exactly.
What?
That was there for about...
What, are you guys from the 30s?
No. That was in... What would you say right around 71, 72?
Had to be in the 70s, yeah.
Get a hamburger, fries, and a drink and change back for your dollar.
Who gets a hamburger? You got a cheeseburger, I hope.
Well, that's not the point.
Yeah, the price.
No, because the cheese is 10 cents extra. Would that push you over?
Well, yeah, then you're way over.
Yeah, you could buy a franchise and it would cost more, too. But that's not the point they were making.
Right. The point was it's a miracle that you could get all that and still get change back from your dollar.
I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. That was for a couple of years they had that. That was a big deal.
I can see the handout where they would put the coins back in.
Yep. Absolutely. I mean, I guess you can't do. I was going to say at White Castle where a hamburger, but you couldn't pull it off for under a dollar.
And with one hamburger, that's like an hors d'oeuvre.
Right. Well,
it's a hamburger hors d'oeuvre.
When I go there, I only get a hamburger.
You do not.
Yeah, I get a hamburger and sometimes fries. That's it.
You eat one slider.
You're talking about at White Castle. I thought you meant at Burger King.
I thought you brought up White Castle.
I did, but I was going.
You didn't tell me you were going back.
I have to go back
to all beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun.
Words that'll be ingrained in your head for the rest of your life. Right?
I just searched it, guys, and it's a 1972 commercial. It looks
to get change back from your dollar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, early 70s, full meal. And still walk away with 4 cents change.
I didn't have my own money then, so I didn't know.
You were working off your mom's money?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
So I wasn't aware of it.
The reason I bring it up is this. A website, Ula.com, which deals with restaurants, says that for every chain like Burger King or McDonald's or White Castle or Wendy's that survive and succeed, there's many, many others that try and just fail. Let me run some of these past you. Tell me if you remember any of these. Now, you will remember some of these. I remembered all but one or two. There's a couple of these that just, for some reason, I do not. Kenny Rogers Roasters. Now, I don't think they had those in Chicago. I think they were mostly East Coast.
I know it from the Seinfeld show.
Right.
I'm sorry.
There
that's
was an
the
episode,
only reason.
You know who was on that episode? Our friend Mark Roberts was on that episode.
I didn't know
Mark
that.
Mark was in there.
Because there was Kenny Rogers and Roy Rogers also had a chicken chain.
Roy Rogers had, like, I guess it was closest to Arby's. It was like sandwiches. It was roast beef and stuff like that. But they had those here. Roy Rogers were here.
And I don't remember that.
You don't remember those at all? No?
But Kenny Rogers Roasters?
Yeah. It was
I only
a
know that
restaurant.
From Seinfeld.
Right. Right.
They weren't here, though, were they, Kenny Rogers?
I don't think so. And what was the one that was in... Somebody of some fame had a restaurant.
Michael Jordan?
He did, but not a chain. In Woodfield Mall, where the A&W is now. That was somebody. Was that Roy Rogers? That might have been Roy Rogers. Wherever the A&W is now in Woodfield, used to be somebody with
a
fairly famous name.
Somebody will know. 312-981-7200. You know, we say we have more weight problems now than when we were kids, but.
Right.
Think about it. We knew all these fast food places when we were kids.
Inside Out.
Yeah.
Inside Out. I miss, you know, we had Jack in the Box here for a while.
Super
and I
Taco.
Miss those. Yeah.
You know where to get those.
West
Burger
Coast.
King.
Oh, right. Right. The tacos at Burger King are very close to the ones that they used to have at Jack in the Box.
Which reminds you how really not good they were, but it's kind of like...
It's nostalgic.
It totally is. Because it's like, who puts a Kraft single on a taco? A half a Kraft single.
I know. I know they had these here, and I think we all know why they don't have them anymore. Sambo's. Remember that restaurant chain, Sambo's?
I remember it, but I don't think I'd ever been to one.
There was one. I used to work in Lincoln Mall when I was in high school, and there was one across the street from Lincoln Mall, a Sambo's restaurant. Those have been gone for a while. The name, very offensive to some people.
Right, ever since sentiment came into being.
Right, that was the downfall of the Sambo's restaurant, I think, is when we all went, wait, what is the name of the restaurant? No, all right. I think they had these here, Steak and Ale. Do you remember Steak and Ale? We used to, there was some in Florida when we'd go to Florida on summer vacation, they'd have Steak and Ale.
I don't think I've ever been to one, but I remember of them.
It says they were based in Dallas, Texas. They started in the 60s. Most of them closed in the 70s, but the last one closed in 2009, the last Steak and Ale. At one point, they were owned by Pillsbury. Pillsbury had a couple of restaurants because...
Pies R Us?
Well,
or Poppin' Fresh. I'm sorry. My grandma would call it Pies R Us. Sorry.
It was
Poppin' Fresh.
Poppin' Fresh, and then they became Baker Square.
Yes, I believe so.
But at one point, there were 109 Steak and Ale stores, and like I said, the last one closed in 2009. This one, I think, is a curious one, White Tower.
Don't recall that.
These were two guys that liked the success of White Castle, a father and son team, John E. Sachs and his son, and decided, because the name White Castle was taken, they stole everything. They took the logo, they took the whole concept, and they made their own restaurants, White Tower, and there were 230 of them at one point.
Really?
Yeah. The first one, actually, you know what's funny? I ate in this one. The first one was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I remember eating in one.
Did it taste like a slider with the
it was
onions
sort of
steamed
similar.
Over the onions?
It was kind of similar.
Square?
I don't remember if it was square or not.
We're getting a lot of calls. There were a bunch of Kenny Rogers Roasters.
Here?
Woodfield, Rockford, Lansing, Hoffman Estates.
Wow, I don't remember those at all.
Yeah, I don't either. Cock Robin, is that on the list?
It's not, but it should be. Loved Cock Robin.
Grew up in Brookfield, and it was walking distance to the Roy A. Overholt baseball field.
So good.
It was. They had square ice cream, too.
Yeah, they
did. Like my food in squares, I think I've decided.
Right.
I do.
Right.
I'm going to make square meatballs from now on.
They had chocolate marshmallow malts, which for some reason that's a flavor that's kind of gone away, the chocolate marshmallow flavor. But boy, were those good. The last one I remember was in Naperville 15 years ago.
Yeah, there was one in Brookfield. There was one in, I guess that was LaGrange because it was Ogden and Mannheim.
Some of them with drive-up service, right, where you could pull up outside. No, you don't remember
you
those
You could
at
walk
all?
Up. It wasn't drive-up. The one in Brookfield, you could, because baseball teams always went there after their game.
Right.
And there was an outdoor window with picnic tables set up, and you would walk up to the window, and they'd slide. I always wanted to work there because I wanted to do the slide. It was like I was a priest, and somebody else was confessing.
They would take confessions at Cock
Robin. I would like a rainbow cone, a jumbo cone, please. I'm sorry. I know I shouldn't be having the calories.
So I couldn't
do
find
a Hail Mary, and I'll give it to you.
I couldn't find the dollar change for your dollar commercial, but I found a screenshot of an old McDonald's board. Menu board from the early 70s.
Can I guess?
Sure.
I'm going to say early 70s, hamburgers were probably either 29 or 39 cents.
28 cents.
28 cents.
Yeah. Well, when I was a young man, Tom, you remember what McDonald's first charged for a burger?
I lived at Glenview, which was the second McDonald's in the area, and it was a walk-up counter. I mean, there was no enclosure or anything. For 47 cents, hamburger, fries, and a Coke.
Wow. Imagine that.
I can't.
Yep. You remember Franksville?
Yes.
What's that?
There was one by Ford City.
Hot dogs.
Oh, like Frank's Red Hots?
Yeah. But it was called Franksville. Yep. And this, I remember the rotating sign. Do you remember the rotating sign on that one?
Yep.
I don't know why, but that... It was a simpler time. I would just
was.
Sit there and look at the sign.
You
look
guys,
at the sign
we didn't
coming,
have cable.
Sign.
We had to like look at something.
What are you going to do with the kids on Saturday? I thought I'd take them over to the Frankville and we'd watch the sign rotate. Oh, that'll be fun.
And then when you had a nice car, Skip's Drive-In on North Avenue, I think
yes.
it was.
Yeah.
What was it called?
Fantastic.
Skip's Drive-In. They always had old car shows on weekends.
Yeah, and you pull out and burn out.
Yeah. I'd go there with Fonzie. We'd have a great time.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. All right, we have a couple more of these. These are restaurant chains that you may remember. They didn't do too well, sadly. We'll tell you more of them in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We're reminiscing about junk food, basically.
Yeah, it turns out, you know, we all know the basics when it comes to fast food, McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, White Castle. But for everyone that succeeds, there's many, many more that don't do quite as well. I remember this one. I don't remember going, but I remember passing these all the time. Noggles Taco Place.
Yeah, my girlfriend Sue was very into Noggles.
She liked
that? Let's go to Noggles. I'm like, what the hell is Noggles?
Yeah. They were sprinkled all over the place. Based in California, they went from 1988 till 1995. They're no longer in existence. This one I remember here in the western suburbs for sure, Burger Chef.
Yeah, with the fat chef.
It was a chef who obviously
had a platter of
enjoyed
burgers.
Food. Do you remember his sidekick's name?
Mr. Burger?
Nope. Steve, Burger Chef's sidekick, anybody? No? Burger Chef and Jeff.
Oh, God, I did know that.
In all their ads, that's darn how it. All the ads started. Burger Chef and Jeff, Burger Chef and Jeff. So they're gone. This is as much of America as you could ever get. Howard Johnson's.
Howard Johnson's, Howard Johnson's. We sang that all the time because, we would stay in the Howard Johnson lodge, you know, the
Ritzy.
Travel lodge or whatever.
Ritzy.
What are you saying? A family vacation? Would you guys stay at the Embassy Suites?
We would stay with kings and queens, yeah, mostly.
The Howard Johnson Motor Lodge was an affordable trip. We only drove to Florida twice.
I wanted to stay there because they had the same color scheme as the Miami Dolphins,
favorite
football team, the same aqua and orange color scheme.
And they had their own soda.
And yeah, they did. They did. And a weird logo of a man looking lovingly upon a younger boy. Do you remember that?
I didn't
Very
see it
strange.
That way.
Every time I'd see that logo, I go, wait, that's the logo they went with? It's a guy smiling weirdly at a boy. I thought that was weird.
He was a kind man.
I guess he must have been.
Hojo Soda.
Yeah. And ice cream that was not good, but you felt, I don't remember if they gave it to you in a meal. Did they just give you ice cream? Because I remember it not being good, but going, well, it's here.
I think they did. And that was part of the excitement. Everywhere we went when I was a little kid, I would order fried chicken.
Yeah.
And my mom would get so irritated with me because it always took like 40 minutes for them to deep fry
chicken.
It.
Yeah.
Like, really? Now you don't have to wait 40 minutes for fried chicken? But they'd, you know, I think they'd kill the chicken and bread it and fry
right.
it. And it'd be
this
like,
is going to take a few days. Are you okay?
With the feathers, ma'am, or should we take the feathers out?
Right.
But every time, it's like, I didn't even need a menu. And my poor mom would go, will you look at the menu? No, I'm going to have fried chicken. And then you would get a scoop of ice cream.
Sure.
And it would come in a little parfait cup with like a foot on the bottom.
That's exactly.
And you're right. It wasn't good. But the fact
Terrible.
That it, you didn't order it and you got it.
Right.
And you could, if you were really good, you would get chocolate sauce and whipped cream.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Did you ever get the chocolate sauce and whipped cream?
Yeah, I don't like ice cream, so you got to camouflage it.
Now, here's something I remember from Howard Johnson's, and I've talked to people about this over the years, and nobody seems to remember it, and I don't know why it made such a... No, I do know why it made such a big impact on me, as a matter of fact. When you were paying to leave, because not all Howard... You know how it's standard in a restaurant? They bring you the bill, and you give it to the waitress, and she goes and gives you your change.
Right.
For some reason, at Howard Johnson's, you had to go up to the counter and pay.
But what was there?
Well, there was a big stand of lollipops. There was a gift shop.
That's where you know you're at a quality restaurant.
Right, if there's a gift shop at the restaurant, right. I know the Pump Room for years and years had a gift shop. All your best restaurants.
God, we
so
were little kids.
There was a big, giant display of lollipops that were chocolate lollipops. They were all chocolate. They were like vanilla and chocolate. They were white with like a chocolate picture. And the reason it means so much to me is... One year there was a Batman and Robin one, and I wanted it so bad, but I didn't want to eat it. I just thought, because I love Batman and Robin, the TV show, I'll just have this lollipop with Batman and Robin on it. This is a great keepsake. And we went to Wisconsin, and I kept it on the back dashboard of the car, and it melted.
Yeah, because it's chocolate.
But I was four. I wasn't putting that together. So then every other time we ever went to a Howard Johnson's, I wanted that Batman and Robin lollipop, and they never had that one. I always had a Raggedy Andy, which I didn't want.
Who wanted that?
Nobody
I had a Raggedy Ann doll,
nobody
and I still
wants,
didn't like
nobody
it.
Nobody wants that.
It's like you, it was a rite of passage when you were a little girl. Here's your Raggedy Ann doll. I don't really want it.
Nobody wanted it.
I was it for Halloween one year, too. My mom dyed a mop red. Bobby pinned it on my hair, put the like stupid mascara markings.
I know.
She did a great job. I had like a white apron to go over my flowered dress.
But you didn't have fun.
I hated
it. You didn't
it.
Want to be Raggedy Andy.
And I carried the Raggedy Ann doll and I couldn't find it because I hid it because I wanted to say, oh, I've lost it. I don't know where it went. I hated her.
Well, I didn't hate them, but you've taken it to a new level. Chi-Chi's.
They're still around.
Gone.
No, that's not true.
Gone.
They're I don't believe
gone.
You.
They're gone. They filed for bankruptcy. Now, it says here they filed for bankruptcy in 2003. You know I was the spokesperson for Chi-Chi's for 2 years, right? Do you know that? I did all their commercials. All their TV and radio was me.
Is that why they went under?
I'm on Raggedy Ann's side now.
You can't be.
I am. Raggedy Ann and I are going to sue you for defamation of character. Only one of us is real. You decide which one. It said they filed for bankruptcy in 2003 following a year of... They had problems with Mexican green onions that tainted their food about hepatitis A.
Okay, that's why they went under?
Infecting 660 people. That's when I decided I didn't want to be their spokesperson anymore because it's hard to work that in a fun way in a TV commercial. Now without hepatitis A. Da-da-da-da-da-da. didn't really sell the way we hoped.
But everybody's had problems with the green onions. And I don't mean Booker T and the MGs.
No, I know.
Because didn't Chipotle have issues with perhaps this? Maybe I think that was the cilantro.
Maybe. Maybe.
But there are still Chi-Chi's brands that you can get online, but no longer.
I think in some grocery stores.
Oh, look, there's a little cartoon picture.
Of me.
Get Chi-Chi's.
I think in some grocery stores, maybe they still have it.
And they have a whole website where you can order products online. But
no
I see Chi-Chi's salsa, yeah.
Yeah, no more restaurants.
You can make your own. Why don't you open your own Chi-Chi's?
I'm open my own.
Do you know who I am? I'm the voice of Chi-Chi's. I have my own Chi-Chi's
now.
Cut
it out. Now you're making fun. A quick break. Steve has the news. Robots will be here soon. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Robo Boogie. The humans are dead. blood. Once again,
without emotion. I don't know why you are so afraid of robots killing us.
Well, because that's how the planet will eventually end, Wendy, is robots will take over, and it's going to happen sooner than you think.
Do you hear that sweet little voice?
Yes, I do.
Oh, my God. Yep. This is Paro, and I'm in love with Paro. He was here last year. Kathleen McCarthy is with us, the director of the collections at the Museum of Science and Industry. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
And that's the robot that's making that noise, right?
It is. It's a little baby seal robot. It's a therapeutic robot, and it's all about making medical patients feel better.
Oh.
And it works on people who aren't sick as well.
Can I tell you?
It works on Wendy.
Well, something happens to me. I was driving in yesterday, and there was a dog in the car in front of me who's sticking its head out the window. And I'm by myself, and I went, oh, look at the little baby.
Yep.
And I'm by myself, and I'm like, okay, first of all, the dog can't hear me. Second of all, why do I do that? But that's what happens when I look at Paro. He is so sweet. Bill does not like to get shots or medical procedures done, but don't you think if he had Paro in his hands, he would be able to calm down?
Yeah, I think we need to let your doctor borrow Paro next time you go for a visit.
That's fine. For people who can't see, Paro is shaped like what sort of seal? I don't know. I can't tell the difference.
It's a baby harp seal.
Baby harp seal.
So don't beat it.
No, of course not. Why would I do that? I would not do that. Don't worry.
And he's sleeping.
And why would you choose a seal? I mean, I know it's for therapeutic reasons, but why a seal over any other animal?
Well, that's a very good question, because originally they started with a cat because they thought a lot of people like cats.
Right.
But the thing is, A, you have some people who don't like cats, and two, we know what a cat looks like and how it's supposed to act. So as advanced as robots are, they aren't really quite ready to take over yet.
Yeah.
And so if it was a cat robot, you'd notice the difference right away.
Oh, I guess so.
Everybody kind of know what a baby seal looks like and what it should act like, but no one's going to be that familiar. So
that makes perfect sense.
Please hold him.
Not right now, but maybe later. Well, in the future, when robots take over the Earth.
Paro's a star. You know you've made it when you've been on an episode of The Simpsons. And on episode 20-something, 23, season 23, Bart's science fair project, a mechanical baby seal, outshines Lisa's brainy asteroid model and becomes a popular pet among the retirement home patrons. Not to give anything away, but Bart kind of reprograms it, so maybe Paro is not so sweet.
Yeah, I think in everybody else's hands but Bart's. He's lovable and adorable.
He trains the robot to kill people at the old people's home, doesn't he?
Is that your fear? Is that why you're scared of robots?
I'm a big fan of science fiction, and even though there's a directive in the robot world, I know it's fiction, but one of the rules of robots is to not attack humans.
Right.
As you know, sometimes they don't follow the rules, these robots.
Well, and that's why, so the reason why we have Paro is because the museum is participating in National Robotics Week, celebrating robots. So if people come to the museum can see all sorts of real robots. And popular culture presents to us images of robots that are sometimes friendly and sometimes not. But if you come to the museum, you'll actually get to see real robots.
Yeah.
So maybe that'll be equally scary to people, I'm not sure, but you'll get to see what's real.
Yeah.
And talk to the people who are at the forefront of making these robots.
Yeah.
Whether we're going to have robots from companies all around the world, from university students, from high school students. So you get a real sense of what the state of the art is today, what the challenges are, and what's coming.
Yeah.
So. And what advancements have come since Paro came to visit us last year?
Well,
I got to come get him. I'm sorry.
Here's Paro.
Wendy's mothering instinct is kicking in.
Yeah. One of the really exciting robots that we have at the Museum for National Robotics Week are robotic jellyfish. So if you think you want to make a robot and you want to make it to imitate something in the natural world,
a
baby seal certainly would be easy, you think about. But these guys thought about a jellyfish. So we have robotic jellyfish.
So they look like a jellyfish, they move like a jellyfish, everything.
But they're not a jellyfish.
Yeah, but
they're not a jellyfish. And it's from a German company, Festo. And they have a whole division, an R&D division that looks to the natural world and then makes robots that imitate that. And then once they manage to create a robotic jellyfish, they've learned from the legs, and now the legs have become a gripper for a robot hand.
Hmm.
So it's a very fun, creative project with real-world applications once they've learned that technology.
Is Asia still, for some reason, at the forefront of robot technology? I know they were for a long, long time. Is that still the case?
They do a lot, but I think that you'll see a lot of what Americans are doing
yeah.
if you come to the museum.
Yeah.
And we have a couple of the local universities that are really, well, Northwestern University will be there, Illinois Institute of Technology. So you get a chance to see what's going on in America.
Oh, good.
I am scratching Paro under his chin, and he's wagging his tail. Is that right?
That's, yeah. I think he really, really likes you. So he reacts.
Now he's humping me.
Oh, my gosh. He really likes Wendy. So he reacts to stimuli.
He really
even
is.
Even that of yeah. somebody like Wendy, who's obviously just in it for her own personal gain.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, and so Paro has, underneath the white fur that he has, are a lot of sensors, different kinds of sensors.
Yeah.
And so it pressure sensor, so it can tell exactly where she's petting him.
Yeah.
The whiskers are sensors as well. And
he's screaming now. I kicked him too hard.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then he has gyroscopes. So if you hold him up, he'll lean into you like you're to give you a hug.
Really?
And actually, if you hold him upside down, he knows that's not pleasant behavior.
And what happens then?
Can you do it,
it's better in your hand.
Makes a screechy, unhappy noise. That's his unhappy noise when you hold him upside down.
Oh. Will you just do it? I want to hear his unhappy noise, and I can't do it to him.
No, it's better. Yeah. It's better that you do.
I'm not holding him upside down. God, come on, this is so cute. And this has a lot of soothing, calming. Some people can't have pets due to allergies or whatever.
Right. And they, in hospitals too, I mean, animal therapy happens
proven.
As well. But with animals, there's the problem of taking them outside and allergies and things like that. Not with robots.
They don't have to go outside. So.
All right. Now, Bill was reading something about they've come up, some crazy man has made a robot that.
It looks, sounds, acts just like Scarlett Johansson.
Oh.
I have a picture of it.
Does it really look like her?
It looks a lot like. Can you see this picture, Kathleen?
Yeah, I've seen it.
It looks just like Scarlett Johansson.
Okay, that is scary.
And for those of us who can never have the real Scarlett Johansson, this wouldn't be a terrible thing, would it?
But what would it do?
All the things that Scarlett Johansson does.
I'm going to guess it doesn't do all the things
does. That would be crazy.
Yeah.
And it would cost more, probably. But this fills a need, doesn't it?
It does. And
I would hold her if you brought her up.
You just turned your own microphone off.
I did, because I was having impure thoughts. I had impure thoughts, Kathleen.
Well, and if you come to the Museum for National Robotics Week, you'll see a humanoid robot.
Seriously.
A Robotus Mini. It's not as close in human form to the Scarlet robot, but you'll get a sense of what a humanoid robot is and how it can move. And the reason, once again, one of the reasons for making it, it's still sort of experimental, but in the future, robots could be our coworkers and our companions. And there are certain things that robots do better than humans, and certain things humans will do better than robots for a very long time. And so the future really isn't humans versus robots. It's robots and humans working
together.
And the reason why you might want to make a robot that looks and acts like a humanoid is our world's designed for humans. So if a robot is the same shape and form, then they just have an easier time in our world.
Yeah. So, because even that, they're like Tesla has cars that drive themselves.
Yeah.
That's a form of robotics, but it's not in human form. It's just built into the technology of the car.
I mean, I suppose we could build a humanoid robot where it would hold us on their shoulders and run for transportation,
but that,
it would be fun,
but
probably not as practical. That's a case where
I would like to build a rickshaw or something.
Yeah, a rickshaw robot.
All right. I hope there are a lot of robot inventors listening to this program.
Sure.
So, but
that's all who listen, Kathleen. That's the only people
but
we have.
But think about all the prosthetics and stuff that totally involve robotic parts.
Yeah.
Where you can have, if you've lost your arm, you can have an arm that can it actually feel and have touch sensations now?
And it can connect to your nervous system,
yes.
So you can send signals to it. So, and that's what we try to do with when we do National Robotics Week is give people are familiar with humanoid robots and factory robots from mostly popular culture.
Sure.
And this way you get to see a wide range of robots and what is a robot. And especially when kids get their hands on these robots, what we really want people to leave, if they come and see National Robotics Week, is to be inspired to to think about robots, to think about getting involved in robots. Whether you're a student, you can talk to the people who are making robots. If you're thinking of a second career or just really want to know more about the wide range of what is a robot. So
we'll find out more about this. We're visiting with Kathleen McCarthy, director of all the collections at the Museum of Science and Industry. We're celebrating National Robotics Week. It's coming, and it's going to be exciting. We'll continue in a moment. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger. No, Will Robinson. Danger.
What was the name of that robot?
That robot's name was Robot.
Oh, that's right. What was Tobar?
Tobar was, they used to show him on Family Classics. Tobar, of course, robot spelled backwards, obviously.
But wasn't there an action figure or something? Because my husband has Tobar.
Oh, I don't think they did. Yeah? I don't remember an action figure of him.
Yes.
Maybe. Yeah?
We have Kathleen McCarthy in the studio. She's the director of collections at the Museum of Science and Industry. And it's Robotics Week coming up. Yeah, it was a little, not an action figure, but it was a little robot. Because I remember for Jim's birthday, his brother rehabbed it, and Tobar works, I think.
Nice.
He walks around our house. Not very big, though. You brought another robot. We have Paro, who is just a little seal that really puts people at ease. And then you brought another little robot with you, which we're going to take video of and put at WGNradio.com. Who is this little robot, Kathleen?
This is Robotus Mini. And his name is the word robot is. And then the company wants you to fill in your own dreams of what a robot is. And so that's where it gets the name Robotus.
I did that with the Scarlett Johansson one.
Yeah. Robot is Scarlett.
Right.
So, and this one is designed as a kit. You can put it together, so you learn about all the parts in the robot, and then you can also program it then to do all sorts of crazy things, like we've got it doing a headstand right now.
And this is through an app of some sort?
Yeah. So when you get it, it comes with already pre-written programs, but it's a great opportunity to have your own robot do whatever you want.
How much does something like that cost? Can I ask?
$1 million.
It's $1 million?
No, it's much less. I actually don't know. It's probably in the range of a couple $100.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, and they really are meant to be educational. So,
But with these kids today and the computer things, if you need help on your phone or your computer, you ask them. Kids are writing code, so I bet kids can crack into that and make their robot do anything, like get them a Sunny D out of the refrigerator or something.
Yeah, and so. Yeah, and
it's currently taking a bow, right? Did you make it do that, or did it decide to do that on its own?
He's still taking commands from us.
Okay, good.
So I asked him to do it.
Okay,
so
good.
And he's going to do his audition for the Blackhawks now.
He did a blocker save, like a goalie would do.
Like, butterfly save.
Yeah, butterfly save.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Pretty cool. Yeah, and he also does a little martial arts.
Oh, wow. A quick martial arts move. So in case another robot, if the seal attacks him, he can defend himself. Good.
And just so that you know, he's not unfriendly. He's very polite.
Yes. All right. Well, that's important.
He'll bow and wave and say hi.
Very nice.
Now, when does National Robotics Week happen? It is currently going on, or
it's currently going on, and it runs through April 10th. So these robots will be at the museum through April 10th, mm-hmm. and there's some different ones every day. So guests can go to our museum website, msichicago.org, to see what the day's activities are. But Robotus Mini, Paro will be there every day. The jellyfish will be there every day, and they are not
Terminator?
To be missed. No, Terminator couldn't make it this year.
Oh, man. So.
It's something to look forward to.
Right.
It's the Museum of Science and Industry. You kind of forget about it when you live here, but make a trip out there. In addition to National Robotics Week that's going on now through April 10th, you also have a big Lego thing going on.
Yeah, Brick by Brick. And guests can come and explore the world of architecture and engineering. There are all sorts of hands-on activities. There are some really amazing models. So you take something very familiar to all of us, Lego, and then turn it into these amazing structures. it just transforms. They're transformed. There's a model of the Golden Gate Bridge that's
stunning.
60 feet long.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And then you can test your own architectural skills. You can build a little structure and then test it against an earthquake and strong winds. And so,
how fun is this?
Yeah. Yeah. And if it holds up, that's great fun. If it falls down, that's great fun too.
Right.
And so we're really fortunate in Chicago to have a Lego certified professional, Adam Reed Tucker, who built all the models you'll see at the exhibit. And then we also have futuristic architectural models from architects around the world, some from Chicago, but some from far away as Japan. And you get to try your hands on a lot of different things.
That's really fun. And we're running out of time here. So very quickly, there's a summer program going on.
Yeah, summer brain games. And so if you go to our website and sign up, families can get activities every week sent to them starting mid-June. And it's all sorts of fun activities using things around your house. And you can imagine every great inventor probably started the same way. It's a great opportunity for kids to stay connected to science and technology over the summer.
And is there an age limit on that? I'm over 18. Can I participate in these summer brain games?
You can absolutely still participate. Kids of all ages.
Excellent. I like when you put it that way. MSIChicago.org. Her name is Kathleen McCarthy. Thank you so much for bringing up the robots. You are not a robot?
Uh-oh. No, you don't have to answer. That's fine.
You weren't supposed to ask.
We're
that's
on
fine.
To you.
All right. Thank you, Kathleen.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it. A little bit of a break. Steve with the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Kristen McQuarrie's here, and I don't know what is happening in this crazy world of politics.
We need to make sense of this for us, Kristen.
We can't. I heard you talking to her off the air, and I don't remember exactly what you asked, but you said, is this unprecedented? A lot of the stuff going on is unprecedented.
Yeah, it is.
It is, and I think when you ask questions about what's going to happen with a convention, is it going to be brokered? Is it going to go to a second vote? Honestly, people don't know. The people who know the most about how all this works are the lawyers for the Democratic Party and the Republican Party who run the conventions, and you will even see them give conflicting accounts of what could happen. So it's,
we're making it up as we go. Well, so we're not, but...
We're not, but this is kind of the time crunch is slimming. You know, we're getting to a point where the conventions are in July. Normally by now, even after Super Tuesday, you have a pretty good idea who your nominees are.
Sure.
Kristen, it seems like there's a lot of underground sort of manipulating and plotting now for this convention.
Absolutely. I mean, there's, you still have people like the RNC chairman last night, Rens Priebus, was saying there is going to be no Paul Ryan. That's a big, you know, Paul Ryan doesn't want to run. He's not going to take it. You're not going to see a brokered convention go to someone who hasn't even been on the ballot in all of these states. If it goes to a brokered convention, it'll be, you know, one of the three candidates who are in the running. I think that's probably true. But again, who knows?
But if it's brokered, help me through this, because like we all said, this is new territory to us. If it's brokered, it's brokered because Trump is the closest to coming to the magic number but doesn't have it. And it means that the party is deciding Trump's not the right guy. So then they go to either Ted Cruz or Kasich, or I have read in more than one place that Marco Rubio is still around the corner peeking in going, I still exist.
He's only suspended his campaign.
He only suspended his campaign.
I love that Wendy keeps remembering that, pointing that out. But they all do
Bill
that.
Bill has had a problem with that, and it's suspended because they have to finish paying their bills and their debts and all that stuff. But if he suspended it, doesn't that mean in this weird case scenario, Marco Rubio could come back in?
I mean, it would mean so each state does it differently, but what you have to have, and so what they will do if Trump does not reach the magic number is they'll have a first round vote. And there's still a pretty big
and
possibility.
Who's involved in that, though?
All of the delegates.
The delegates, okay.
And it depends by state. Like Illinois, I don't know if you voted. If you voted in the primary, you actually voted for a delegate with their name attached to it.
Yeah.
We only have, I think, 5 out of 69 or something delegates who could break free on the first round.
Okay.
Everyone else, it was by congressional district. There are 3 delegates per congressional district. And if you look at the winners, they're all Trump, Cruz, and Kasich because they had the highest vote totals in our state. So, like, if you voted for a Rand Paul delegate on your ballot, they're not going. They're not going to the convention. So we are a state where it's pretty set in stone that on the first round ballot, you have to vote for who you are getting sent. Not every state is like that.
Right.
And even in our state, on the second round, then you are free to break from who you're sent there for and vote for someone else. The danger for that is, so look at Wisconsin yesterday. Bernie Sanders did well everywhere outside of Milwaukee. If you go to the convention as a Bernie Sanders delegate from one of those congressional districts where it was a clear winner for him, is it unethical of you to jump over? And the same on the GOP side. Could you see people breaking away from Trump if their district that sent them to the national convention to, you know, cast a vote for Trump, if they go in a different direction? So, I mean, there's a lot at play here.
Okay, so now what does this mean for Hillary Clinton? Because people are feeling the burn.
Yeah.
He did better than anticipated.
He did do better than anticipated. And I was actually surprised that he did really well in like Madison and pretty much every place in Wisconsin.
College towns, though, right?
Yeah. Like that's not as big of a surprise, right? But some of these rural Wisconsin areas I would have thought would not have been comfortable with an East Coast Jewish guy. I really didn't. I thought.
And throw in the socialism, the Democratic socialism.
There you go. Throw in the social. I thought they would be a little more mainstream. So. Wisconsin might be a little bit of an aberration in terms of results. New York is next. And on the Republican side, you have Donald Trump, who's really popular in New York, from New York. And Ted Cruz, remember during one of the debates, he ripped on New York? He called him... he is an example of the New York culture or something.
Yeah, he said something very derogatory about New York, so that could bite
the type
him a little bit.
Manhattan, especially, yeah. Right. So I think Trump is going to do well in the city and the surrounding areas. And Hillary Clinton was a senator from New York for how many years?
Yeah.
So I think we're going to get back kind of on the front runner track in these next few primaries. But Donald Trump has to win 60% of the delegates in every state going forward in order to meet that magic number.
Now, do they really like him in New York? I know he's from there, but you know how sometimes you don't like your own?
Right. I get the sense that they do. And I think he's kind of, you know, he's a goofball, but he's their goofball. And somebody like Ted Cruz is very... tight on, you know, gun control and anti-gun control. And New York City is...
I know you're laughing at their it's
I'm
his,
laughing
their goofball.
It's the guy running for the presidency of the United States, the most important position in the world.
He's and our yet, goofball.
That's the mindset, is he may be a goofball,
but he's our goofball.
But it's the president of the United States. It's so amazing that it's come down to that.
Right. You know? I mean, maybe Kasich will make a surprise. I just don't see New York City, Manhattan voters as being as far right and dogmatic as Ted Cruz.
Right.
So I don't think he poses a real threat for Trump in New York.
Last week was probably, and I think Donald Trump has admitted this was his weakest week, right? I mean, a lot happened last week. Even if you look at what's happened with him the last 6 months, there have been all kinds of negatives where you go, okay, that's the straw that broke the camel's back, but it doesn't. It keeps making him stronger. But last week, for some reason, I think mostly about the women being punished for abortions,
I think
a lot of people really went, uh-oh, wait a minute.
You would think that he would have thought through that issue to answer that question more clearly. And when you have pro-life people and pro-choice people uniting against you, you're in trouble. You said something really awful. And he did. I mean, I don't think he had fully thought through. They didn't allow him to really complete the answer that he was trying to give. But there was that. And then his campaign manager, more came out about the campaign manager shoving that reporter. And it turned out that, you know, yes, they actually did. They lied. I mean, they said initially that they had no contact with her. They didn't touch her. And then, in fact, the video shows they did. And even last night, Wisconsin's primary, everybody who lost sent out a nice, you know, like Hillary Clinton sent a congratulatory note to Bernie, a little press release. Trump's state,
speech.
Right. So Trump loses badly after going after Scott Walker, the governor, whom is very popular with Republican primary voters there. Instead of being gracious, he puts out a statement that starts right off saying, Lion Ted Cruz had the governor of Wisconsin, conservative talk shows, and the entire party apparatus behind him. He goes on to talk about how Ted Cruz is worse than a puppet. He is the Trojan horse being used by the party bosses attempting to steal the nomination from Mr. Trump. So
he's kind of not lying, though.
On which part?
About the Trojan horse. I mean, I just find it shocking that this whole Republican Party is now thinking, hey, we don't want him representing us. We got to do something different. That is completely destroying the whole party.
I agree with you 100% on that. I mean, I am not a Trump supporter, but I support the rights of Trump supporters to be heard.
Yeah.
And I do, it's a tightrope for Ted Cruz to walk because he's trying to run as an outsider like Trump, but now he's got the party insiders helping him. So that's going to be very difficult of a case for him to make. Going forward. But I feel that if you are a Republican primary voter, you had a huge selection of candidates in the beginning, 17 people running.
Mm-hmm.
You ended up with Cruz and Crump. And
just let's, do let's, it. Just
let's
do it
together.
Like that.
Crump. Let's no, come
I
up like
I
a...
like Crump.
Helen Crump, who's from Mayberry. Nobody expected her to win.
Right, like they need a Brangelina type.
That's true. All right. Kristen McQuarrie is here from the Chicago Tribune. We'll pick this up in a little bit. If you'd like to jump in, questions or comments at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kristen McQuarrie is here from the Chicago Tribune. We're all trying to make sense of the political situation in the country. Not that easy to do. John Kasich staying in so far hurts whom more? Does it hurt Donald Trump more or does it hurt Ted Cruz more that he's still a factor?
I think it's hurting Donald Trump more because Donald is more in a position now where he needs it, it's getting close. I mean, it's not getting close enough that I don't still think Trump is going to be the nominee. But Cruz is catching up enough where if Kasich dropped out, and more of his supporters would go to Trump, that would be helpful. Yeah. I don't see that happening. Kasich supporters are a little bit more moderate, and mm-hmm. But you know, Cruz is far to the right, so mm-hmm. maybe they would favor a Trump over a Cruz.
All right, Bob has a question here. Listener Bob wants to jump in. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how you doing? I love you guys, but every once in a while I want to reach through the phone and just grab you by the shoulders and shake you.
Because why?
Well, for one thing, you're talking about Trump like he's being picked on. And the fact of the matter is, if you go back in history, Lincoln would have never made it to the presidency because he would, based on what your logic is, because he didn't lead in delegates. He didn't get it to the third ballot. So based on your logic, the person who went in leading should have been made president. And he's not the only one. In fact, Lincoln should have never even got in there anyways because things that he did to get into that convention would be considered illegal today. Sanders admits he's not a Democrat, but he knew he couldn't run as a third party candidate. He's a socialist, but he ran as a Democrat. So the person who has the most doesn't necessarily win. It has to be you hit that number, and if you don't, then it can become a contested convention,
right.
And the best person then wins that they think can win. It isn't.
I think, but we said that. That's exactly what we said.
Well, no.
Go ahead. What did I say? Because what I am confused about is you have your Republican Party and people have voted and are continuing to vote and Trump is pretty much leading everybody. And then the Republican Party is scared of what Trump might bring to the office. So now they're kind of saying to their people, you know, your vote didn't matter that much. We have to change plans. We're going to call an audible. That's what I think is unfair.
But I don't think you're calling an audible because you're saying the same logic then would have applied to Lincoln.
I'm not a history buff, so I don't really know what happened in the Lincoln days.
The convention rules change every 4 years, and so to try to make that comparison is just kind of apples oranges right now. The convention, they change the rules every 4 years. They sit down and make decisions about mm-hmm. how to protect. I mean, superdelegates didn't come around until the early 1970s for the Democrats or the early 1980s. So I think that's a little bit of a stretch.
To those rules, right? I mean, you know going in what the rules are. Trump knew going in what the rules are. The thing is, he's like a petulant little baby. If I don't get my way, I'm going to pack up and go away. He's not a true Republican. He's not a true conservative.
And he's not going away.
But he's not going away, but he might not get the nomination either. And to think just because he's leading in delegates that he deserves it, I don't think so.
He's leading in delegates, though, because voters are choosing him. So, I mean,
and the Republican Party is kind of saying, don't care who you chose. We don't think he's a good guy to represent us. We got to call an audible. That's what I think is totally wrong.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing I think about it, too, is that you have a situation, and I know that this has happened before in Chicago, where people have crossed over and are voting for Trump, who normally wouldn't have come over there and voted for him.
Yep.
Strategically, you mean?
Right, strategically.
Okay.
That's
right.
True. That's so, what I wonder, how much is strategery and how much is people voting for him. That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah.
And with these open primaries, or what are they called?
Is that it?
The unbound delegates?
Well, where people are doing it strategically as opposed to just voting for whom you want. In fact, when I went in there and they asked Republican or Democrat, I went, I have to think of my strategy.
Right.
And then I answered my question and they didn't laugh. I meant it as a joke, but people were doing that.
But you had the right to do that. And
right.
I think the issue that Bob is raising is what I hear a lot. The broader issue of when you are voting, you are actually voting for delegates. You are voting for part of a political process. You're not voting for that person. And that is true. But I don't think people in their heart of hearts really understand, believe, or support that. I think when you go into the voting booth, people were choosing Donald Trump. And so even if the party says, no, these are the rules, this is how it works, you were just choosing delegates, we can go in a different direction. Unless it's really close, if Cruz does get really close, that might justify a second round of, justify a second round of balloting.
You could take that a step further then and use that argument for the general election, because there have been people elected who have not won the plurality of the votes, but they've won the Electoral College.
Talk to Al Gore about that.
Right. So you could take it that step further and say, well, that's not fair.
It wasn't fair.
Right.
It wasn't fair. That wasn't fair.
Oh, my God, your bleeding heart is killing me.
Oh, give me a Band-Aid.
Bob, we have to thank you for the phone call.
You.
We appreciate it. It gets crazier and crazier. I mean, every time you think you've seen the worst of it or the strangest of it, it just keeps getting stranger.
Right. Well, even Sanders is, he is losing in delegates because of this whole superdelegate issue helping Hillary. She has like 476 or something superdelegates, which you can complain and say the Democrats shouldn't have that rule.
Yeah.
It gives extra power to party insiders to make sure that their candidate gets elected. I think Bernie has like maybe 1/10 of the superdelegates that she does. And those are the rules. So does that mean now we should turn around and give it to Bernie? Imagine what the Hillary Clinton supporters would say.
Wouldn't sit well with them, would it?
It would not.
My God, is this messed up.
Isn't it?
It seems so complicated.
Well, the rules keep changing, and they differ from state to state, and sometimes they differ from party to party, and no one can keep track of it. I don't know how you keep track of it.
I really don't.
It's impossible.
Nobody does. If somebody gets on the air and pretends like they're an expert and they know exactly what's going to happen at the convention, they're completely
right.
liar, pants on fire.
Well, you're the closest we have, so that's why we keep inviting you back.
Goodness sakes, well, thanks.
Thanks, Kristen. Kristen McQuarrie, read her in the Chicago Tribune. Appreciate you being here. A quick break, and then we'll find out what Rowan Hanna have next. It's Bill and Whitey WGN.